Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Welcome to The Big Show, an abbreviated edition. Just 3 hours on The Big Show today with Logo and Nault and Steinberg. We've got Jays Rays in its entirety. First pitch, 5.07 p.m. this afternoon on your drive home this evening here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We are live in the Iconic studio this afternoon, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Maintenance, it's Iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more. Speaking of the Jays, that's where we'll start.
3-1. There's a swing and a shot up the left field line. Screaming into the corner, and it's gone! A frozen rope right up the line and over the wall and left. There's a new home run leader, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with number 45.
These guys are out of their minds right now. 45 for Vladdy Guerrero Jr. 8 more runs against the Rays last night. How about Alek Manoah? He goes 8 strong, 10 strikeouts, 1 hit. Red Sox lose last night. The Jays were already ahead of New York, so the Blue Jays wake up today with sole possession of the number one wild card spot in the American League. Tonight, game 2 of 3 against the Rays. Jose Berrios, Drew Rasmussen, your pitching matchup for the Jays and Rays, respectively. Will, 18 games to go. Jays have destiny in their own hands. And I don't even have hot takes on the Jays. I'm not even going to dive in on big baseball analysis. I am just dialed in, fired up, all in on this Jays playoff push, and it has been, not only has it been fun because I'm a Jays fan, not only has it been fun because it's good for the company and good for the station, but like, these guys are fun to watch. You do not get firework-free baseball when you watch the Jays.
No, it's pretty awesome what they're doing right now, and you know, I'll be the first to admit it. This is a team that I believe was dead and gone. Adnan Virk believed they were dead and gone. Anybody you talk to who covered...
Just to defend you for a second, who didn't think, even though I wasn't here, but I thought they were done. I'm like, okay, well, it was a nice thought, but nobody saw this coming.
Used to joke every time, once in a while, Pinder and I will send each other voice messages on WhatsApp, and all it is swinging a drive. And I sent him that after they lost to, I believe it was the Twins. But I said, swing and a drive. And he texted me back with, swing and I missed the playoffs. So, you know, everybody thought this team was gone. And, you know, you mentioned it. Maybe it was Logan in headlines. I can't remember who said it. But you know, he talked about every team around them has been at or below 500 for the last, 2.5, 3 weeks. And the Jays have been essentially unbeatable. They've taken advantage of their weaker schedule. They've obviously won to kick off this very important 3-game set against Tampa Bay. And they've just been so much fun to watch. And everything has pretty much gone right for this team. I saw Charlie Montoyo joking yesterday that just keep the same 9 every game. I don't have to change my lineup. This is working. Whatever we're doing is working.
Set it and forget it.
And the other thing, too, is the biggest talking point for this team into the season was pitching. And all eyes were on Nate Pearson. And it's Alek Manoah who has come in and essentially been their second best starter behind Robbie Ray. Steven Matz has had flashes, don't get me wrong. And especially post All-Star break, he's been really, really good outside of a couple of starts. And, you know, Hyunjin Ryu all of a sudden has become like the third or fourth starter because of the performance. Yep. And Alek Manoah last night, 17 whiffs. 17, 10 strikeouts, goes 8 innings. Like, ridiculous what he's done for this team. And he's a complete power pitcher with a great slider as a secondary.
His slider was ridiculous yesterday.
And the Jays are just right now looking like a team that, you know, you can't beat. And if I'm the Rays, if I'm the White Sox, if I'm the Houston Astros, you don't want to play this team in the playoffs.
Nope.
Why would you? And who knows what happens come playoff time, as you said yesterday. I mean, best of 5, you're probably still leaning Tampa. But right now, and I said it, you know, the danger is, can they keep it going through all of September into October? That's going to be the hard part, because you're going to hit another streak where you're pretty cold. And actually, we saw that going into Saturday against Baltimore, and they somehow just found it.
yeah.
But you know, you get no hit by the worst team in baseball for six innings, and then all of a sudden, bam, there it is. So, you know, again, when you hit that cold streak, what does that look like when you come out of it? But no question, this turnaround has been so fun to watch, and if they can have the home field for that one-game wild card, it greatly changes things. And all of a sudden, you know, I think more than any other sport, confidence is such a big thing in baseball, and that's a very, very confident group right now.
Swing and a drive. Swing and a drive. Swing and a drive.
I believe swing this is like drive. 10 minutes long.
Swing and a drive.
65 seconds.
Swing and a drive.
You don't have to listen to the whole thing.
Never gets old.
It takes a little while. There's so many drops in that morning show folder. Like the slider bar in our internal system is the size.
And when you open the folder, it takes like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
to load.
That's why it took, like, it literally, it was finally
buying,
loaded.
Buying you time there. I knew you were queuing up. Is Ryan Pinder.
12 and a half minutes.
Pinder loves the swing and a drive, and it's fantastic. He'll send me videos all the time. He'll just be like in the car with his kids, and he'll just scream swing and a drive. His kids love it.
His buck's pretty good, I'm not going to lie.
It is. He's got some good.
His cherry's good. His buck's good.
No, nothing's as good as his Benning.
Yeah, his Benning is next level, no doubt about it.
Yeah, he's got some ammunition for sure on a bunch of different guys. And yeah, I mean, the Jays are just so fun to watch right now. There's no question.
Good on the Jays as they now hold sole possession of the number one wild card in the American League after yesterday's 8-1 win over the Rays. Game 2 of 3 against Tampa tonight. 5:07 first pitch with Jose Berrios on the mound. We'll have it for you in its entirety right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. As that game, Jays and Rays, was going on last night, a Monday Night Football game was going on as well. Pretty entertaining one between the Raiders and the Ravens in Vegas, but nothing more entertaining than that absolute freak show of an overtime.
Carr throws a line drive into the end zone. It's deflected and intercepted. It's intercepted in the end zone, and falling down was Anthony Everett. The ball ricocheted on a line drive throw by Derek Carr into the end zone, and the ball went popping straight up, and then diving and falling down and cradling the ball like a baby in the end zone was Everett in the secondary for the Ravens. Six in the secondary. Shotgun snap. They rush five. Down he goes. Set. Ball loose. It's loose. A fumble. The Raiders think they've got it. At the 28, let's see. Yes, they do. Jackson is fumbled.
What else can happen, Kevin?
I don't know. Let's see. Carr's going to get the shotgun snap. They blitz from the side. It's picked up. He throws an arching pass down the side. It's caught at the 5. Touchdown, Zay Jones. The Raiders have won on a touchdown pass of 31 yards.
You heard it live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I cannot remember NFL overtime that dumb. In a good way.
It was crazy. And I could listen to Kevin Harlan all day.
So good. Perfect. Like he's great on TV, but he's even better on radio. Cause the way that he said, I don't know if there's a better radio football guy on the planet. I don't think there is than Kevin Harlan. He is so good as the lead guy.
How about the celebration, the video review, the doink off the helmet interception.
Well, and the false start. Because remember, they were on the half-yard line and then a false start.
They were like on the inch-yard line because that couldn't have been closer. Would have loved a live cam on Peter Klein last night.
No kidding.
Yeah, unreal finish to that game. And the fact that they get that ball back and then win it on a play where apparently they just forgot about Zay Jones. They're like, okay, well, see you later.
That was like when you play.
Derek Carr takes like the 9-step drop off the back foot.
Looked like, I don't know
then
if
it's
you
like, still.
Did
still.
You ever play NFL Blitz?
Yes.
And the suicide blitz? That's what it looked like.
I played more NHL hits than NFL Blitz.
Yeah, NHL hits was good too.
But yeah, I played some NFL Street, actually.
NFL Street was really fun.
You climb up the wall and get around guys.
See, an NFL Blitz, like, it was if you found a couple of plays that worked and you knew how to execute them, you could just touchdown, 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 or sack, sack, sack. The one suicide blitz was the one where everybody comes, and if you time it right as the quarterback, you get a touchdown every time against the suicide blitz because you just got to find your guy over the middle. That's what the final play looked like. How is he that open? That overtime was insane. That atmosphere was insane. Like, how about, I know they played in Vegas last year, but how about that introduction to fans in Vegas of the NFL? That atmosphere, that game. Good on the Raiders. Good on the Raiders. What they were last night was kind of what I expected them to be. Suspect defensively at times, but they have got...
That D-line is so good, though.
They do have a very good D-line. No doubt about it. Nassib
was unreal last night. Max Crosby is one of the guys that I don't think gets enough love for how good he is. And, Gerald McCoy gets hurt last night. Apparently doesn't look good for him, but they've got some depth all of a sudden on that defense. And then they signed KJ Wright right after training camp.
Yep.
He gets cut by the Seahawks, and they suddenly have some depth in that front seven. I'm not saying their linebacker core is all of a sudden going to be outstanding, but they've got guys that can rotate on the D-line to stay fresh, and when you've got a pass rush like they have, you're going to do some pretty good things, and there might not be a bigger play in that game than the Carl Nassib strip of Lamar Jackson in overtime.
They've got some explosiveness on offense, especially like Derek Carr made almost threw the ball 60 times last night. I know overtime
54, I believe it was
56 when it's all said and done. 435, two touchdowns. I'm not expecting him to throw the ball 60 times every game, but with that receiving group, they've got some explosiveness. And like if you're a Darren Waller fantasy owner, he had a good game. He didn't have an incredible game. He had a good game. 105 and a touchdown. Do you know how many times they targeted him last night? 19 targets for Darren Waller. He almost doubled the next looks of that receiving card.
John Gruden called him the best player he's ever coached.
Guy is unbelievable. So if you took him in kind of an early second round kind of look, like if you took him where a lot of people said it might have been early to take a tight end, you're feeling pretty good about the way the Raiders are using Waller after last night. 19 targets. He caught 10 of them, and about four of them Carr overthrew him. So he could have had a bigger night when it was all said.
And you know what's crazy? Kyle Pitts, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, Travis Kelce, Austin Hooper, Mark Andrews, Zach Ertz, Logan Thomas, Rob Gronkowski, Nick Boyle, Kyle Rudolph, Jimmy Graham, and Tyler Higbee, all making more cash than Darren Waller.
Yeah, he's going to get ridiculous. He is going to get paid. Like for all of a sudden Waller to enter the conversation in the same conversation with Travis Kelce, shows you just how, like, Travis Kelce might be the best of all time when it's all said and done. And for Waller to be in that conversation with him right now shows you just how good he was. Anything else? The only other thing that jumped out at me from a fantasy standpoint last night was Jacobs for the Raiders. He didn't put up a ton of yardage. He was under 34 when it's all said and done, but got the red zone looks. Two touchdowns when it was all said and done for Jacobs. That, to me, if you took him as your RB2 in fantasy this year, you're feeling pretty good about the fact that he got plenty of action inside the 20.
Yeah, I mean, obviously huge concern in the offseason with Kenyon Drake. What was that role going to look like? Certainly Josh Jacobs went from being the bell cow to all of a sudden being a question mark. Was it going to be a committee? Then you factor in that he was placed late in the week on the COVID-19 list. You're like, oh boy, is he going to play? Battling illness, and he came in and had a pretty good game for the Vegas Raiders, who open up that stadium, which looks unbelievable.
Looks awesome.
And, this is a team that all of a sudden has got some hype surrounding them, and that's a pretty good way to start the season when you know everybody in that division is improved. We talked about it yesterday, Pat. Chargers are better. Broncos look better. The Chiefs are in a class of their own, so you've got to keep pace with everybody. And everybody in the AFC West is 1-0 after week one.
Couple of other notes from around the sporting world. The 8 COVID positives in New Orleans, you're like, whoa! And then you're like, oh, only one player. 6 offensive coaches a nutritionist.
One staff, yeah.
And one player is what it's all said and done. So won't affect their ability to play in week two. Kamar Jordan, Stephen Banks of the Stampeders, each honored by the league today. Just quickly, Kamar Jordan, best receiver in the CFL? Or would you put him in the conversation at the very least? I would.
It's hard for me. The reason I'm hesitating is because, no offense to anybody else in Calgary, but he's putting up numbers because who else does Calgary have? And would you take him over other guys right now in the CFL?
Would
you take him over Kenny Lawler?
Lawler's having a hell of a year.
I love Lucky Whitehead.
I was going to put Burnham in that conversation.
I don't know if Whitehead's a number one in the CFL.
Turned
but
into one,
man,
with Riley throwing to him. Darrell Walker, I'd probably put in that pure talent conversation. I'd put Kamar Jordan in that conversation.
I think he has to be. And it's funny because all the questions about Calgary's receiving corps going into the year, they've got three of the top six receivers in the league through, more than a third of the season for everybody when it comes to games played.
They'll be halfway done after their game in Hamilton this week.
Should also mention Kahari Jones testing positive.
Yes, Kahari Jones testing positive in Montreal, so he will miss their next game. And we know that Dane Evans will not be starting for Hamilton. We found no Evans, no Mazzoli. Watford looks like he's going to be the starting quarterback for Hamilton.
Good luck, Hamilton.
Makes you feel a little bit better about Calgary's chances on the road, where they are 2-for-2 so far.
And also put Greg Ellingson in the conversation.
Yes, Ellingson. Yes, 100%. Ellingson is in that best receiver conversation too. And just finally to wrap up the segment, one quick hockey note. It is Calgary related ish. Mark Jankowski going to Devils training camp on a PTO. And we are now a little bit more than 9 years removed from Mark Jankowski being drafted in the first round by the Calgary Flames. And I am not trying to pile on. I am not trying to be rude. I am not trying to take a shot at Jankowski. But it came full circle for me when I read that news today. Is anyone surprised that less than a decade later, this guy is a fringe NHLer? And I know that he was a regular NHLer for a few seasons in Calgary. I know that. But when he was taken in the first round, you're like, what? How did he go here? What? Why would they take him there? And I don't know, it was a John Weisbrod and a Jay Feaster thing that they were enamored with him, and they hyped him way more than they ever should have. But like, is anybody surprised that Mark Jankowski...
Regular texter Mike would be surprised.
Yeah, where is
he kept texting in last year telling me how wrong I was on Jankowski.
Well,
didn't
he have like 3 points in his
first
game?
Look at this, Will. You're so wrong. Look, I don't think anybody should be surprised by this. If you're watching it objectively and knowing what Jankowski was at the tail end of his career. And I said this to you last week at Wild Rose, Pat. Everything went right for this team in 2018-19. You can't look at Jankowski's 32 points and be like, that's what he is. That's not what he is. And the year before that, he scored 17 goals because he scored 4 in the final game of the season. He's not anything more than a guy you can play 10 minutes a night and hope that he doesn't get scored on when he's out there. That's what he is. And look, credit to him. He's played 253 games. That's more than I think, I expected of him. But, hey, maybe he makes his Devils team and is a league minimum guy who rotates on their fourth line. But if you are surprised by this news, then you weren't looking at it objectively. He is what he is. He was a guy who was a big body, never really skated well, was never hard on the puck. That was the biggest thing for me when I look at Jankowski. If only he played like he was 6'4". He never played like he was 6'4".
And that was the knock on him. And
he played like he was 5'10".
And I would always defend, big bodies, different positions. But I always defended Jay Bouwmeester. I always defended Dougie Hamilton about not being a big physical guy. Well, that's because they did other things at an elite level, right? You can't say that about Jankowski. He's
on
a PTO.
When you look up a player and he's drafted in the first round, you can't find any information on him. Might lead you to what he is going to be.
Yeah. Also, Tyler Watherspoon on that same PTO announcement, the former Flames draft pick as well.
And Jimmy Vesey.
And Jimmy Vesey was the third guy to fill that out.
Who said, Nashville, I'm better than you. I'm not signing with you.
And now he's played for half the NHL. since leaving the Nashville Predators. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, thrilled to support the grand opening in Canmore of Can Golf, and we're giving one lucky listener an amazing weekend getaway this month, which includes a golf experience at and food at Can Golf on September 28th with Ryan Pinder and Luke Elvey, an overnight stay at the Coast Canmore Hotel and Conference Center, and $250 at Can Golf for some future fun. Go to sportsnet.ca/960 to enter. We will select a winner later on this month. All brought to you by Can Golf, the new hotspot in Canmore, featuring 5 state-of-the-art simulators, a best-of-the-bow food and drinks menu, plus an event space boasting spectacular mountain views.
We all know Elijah Mitchell of the San Francisco 49ers is the number one ad in fantasy football this week. But who else is on that list? Where should you be putting your fab budget? Fantasy football talk with Joe Dolan next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
I remember one time I just led into a referee. I knew the guy. He's a good guy. I let it call the worst holding call. I let him have it. I felt so bad. I asked the NFL for his address after the game. I was going to write him an apology letter. They wouldn't give me his address because they thought I was going to go and, like, you know, egg his house or something. I'm like, I just want to write him an apology letter. Like, nobody writes the referees an apology letter. So anyway, the guy thinks I'm a jerk to this day because I cussed him out for a holding call against the Dolphins in the second quarter.
It's Peyton Manning. Last night, the Manning Monday night made his debut on ESPN. Boy, what a start to Monday Night Football in the NFL's regular season. Welcome back to the program. My name is Will Nault. I don't think Peyton Manning was going to egg his house, but apparently the NFL would not give him the address of whatever referee he cussed out after what he thought was the worst holding call. There were so many great moments in that broadcast, and chat a little bit about Monday night, but obviously the focus is on Waiver Wednesday. For some more fantasy talk, let's bring in our Tuesday regular.
Sportsnet 960's NFL Fantasy Insider Joe Dolan is brought to you by Gateway Mechanical. Switch and save 10% or more on your commercial HVAC or refrigeration maintenance. Learn more today at gatewaymechanical.ca/switch.
Joe joins us right now. First of all, Joe, how much, if any, Manning Monday night did you watch last night?
I did. I switched between both broadcasts because I wanted to kind of get a feel for both broadcasts, and I thought it was a nice change of pace, and obviously the reviews have been great, and, you know, I think that's, I thought it was a really interesting broadcast. Peyton was kind of telling stories, he was giving insight, obviously Eli was too. It's a delicate balance, though. Like, yeah, you have to have the right people to do it, and I think they did a really good job with it. And I switched back and forth between the two broadcasts, and I would imagine a lot of people did that as well. So that's what I did just to try to get a feel for it. But I thought it was probably, they would think, an overwhelming success with the guests and, you know, making fun of Charles Barkley for gambling and, you know, all that stuff was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, I love the bit, too, with Ray Lewis. He's like, I was going to sign in Baltimore, but I heard Ray kicks the crap out of his quarterbacks in practice, so I decided not to sign in Baltimore. I thought that was pretty funny. Just before we get into some of the waiver ads and what you saw in week one, what did you make of last night? And, I mean, everyone's talking about the overtime, the early celebration, the false start, the doink interception. There was so much in that game. What did you make of Raiders and Ravens?
Well, what's funny about that game is 60 points were scored. I don't really think either quarterback was particularly sharp. I mean, at least Derek Carr for the first few quarters of the game, I don't think was really sharp. I mean, Darren Waller had 19 targets. He probably should have had like 15 receptions. He had only 10. But for 435 for Derek Carr without looking particularly sharp, I think the Raiders are going to be happy with that. The Raiders might have a few more weapons than you might think. You know, Henry Ruggs is a certain kind of player. Derek Carr missed him, I think, on the second play of the game. He was wide open. It would have been a touchdown if he saw him. But that's the kind of player he is. But Bryan Edwards, everybody was asking us because, you know, at the site and at Fantasy Points, we were kind of hyping him up this offseason. And, you know, where was he? Well, he shows up in overtime and he makes some big plays for them. So for the Raiders, I think it was clear if you were watching the game that while he looked on his carries, I thought he looked good. Josh Jacobs was not 100%. They used Kenyon Drake as a receiver, and I think that's going to be a fantasy-relevant role for Kenyon Drake moving forward. And if you flip it over to Baltimore, Hollywood Brown and Sammy Watkins got it done. I did not think Lamar was sharp at all as a passer. Obviously, he's just otherworldly as a runner. That's beside the point. And I think if you come out of that game and you had picked up Tyson Williams, I think you're probably pretty pleased with what you saw. He clearly looked like, well, that he had more juice than Latavius Murray.
Yeah, and I think we saw that, and certainly Sean Payton, why he made the decision he did, didn't know if there was a lot left in that tank. I know that, you know, not only you, but a lot of your peers were talking about the fit in Baltimore for Murray. He ends up out-carrying Williams, but as you say, when you look at what they had last night, it's very clear Williams had more pop, more gas in the tank, and certainly was hitting the holes a lot harder. As Murray gets used to that playbook, though, and it spends more time there, do you expect this to continue to be a 50-50 split? Or overall, how do you view the Ravens' backfield?
I don't think the Ravens, because of the nature of their offense, can have one back. I really don't, because of how run-heavy they are. The encouraging thing for me for Tyson Williams, with the exception of, you know, the fact that he looked like he had far more juice than Latavius Murray, the receiving production, 3 catches for 29 yards. Yeah. That is not something that Gus Edwards, we were building into his projection. I don't know if we were building 3 receptions a game into J.K. Dobbins' projection. I don't know if he'll get 3 a game, but that was an element of his game that he has. And that is stickier for fantasy, you know, than touchdowns and whatnot. And I don't expect him to be Christian McCaffrey, but it was nice to see Lamar Jackson check it down a little bit to a guy who has some juice. As a matter of fact, you know, watching Williams, I thought he was kind of built like a receiver. Like, yeah, he almost had that kind of tall, lanky build that was kind of interesting. And so it was good to see him catch some passes. That was my takeaway from that game for that backfield. I'm not telling you, by the way, to drop Latavius Murray. Somebody who's going to get 10 carries a game, if that continues in this offense, is valuable to have on a fantasy team. But Williams is clearly the guy, I think.
Joe, as we transition to Waiver Wednesday and look at, you know, potential adds into week 2, it's always the danger, of course, of overreaction on week 1. But speaking of Baltimore running backs and gas in the tank, what's your takeaway on Mark Ingram in Houston with 26 carries? I know it was against Jacksonville, but the biggest, you know, you talk about guys that get carries. I mean, 3 carries inside the 5. This thing could obviously flame out, but thoughts on Mark Ingram, who clearly is the guy that Houston was favoring in week 1.
My read on this situation is fool's gold. I got questions asking me about Elijah Mitchell of San Francisco, and I'm sure you're going to ask about him, so I know we'll get to him, vis-a-vis Mark Ingram, and one is just so clearly above the other. I mean, like, this is Houston week 1 beating a bad defense, a bad team with a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach who doesn't seem to have a grasp on what he's doing just yet, if I'm being kind. I think this Ingram thing is complete fool's gold. If you can pick him up for nothing, fine, put him on the end of your bench. I expect going forward that Houston backfield is going to look more like what the Jets backfield looked like in week 1, where you have 3 guys rotating and none of them did diddly poo for fantasy. That's going to be my read. I think this is a week 1 anomaly. Remember, Mark Ingram was somebody Baltimore actively benched at the end of last season. So, like, this is one where if you can pick him up for nothing, fine. I'm not throwing any fab budget. There are so many guys I would rather roster than Mark Ingram.
I'm an Ingram owner, and I'm trying to trade him, which is obviously
Well, I mean, if you could find somebody, I would do that. Yeah. Like, that's exactly what I would do.
Speaking of Elijah Mitchell, there's no question he is the top add out of week 1. He surprised everybody with not only his active spot on the roster, but with how much usage he got. It helped with the early injury to Mostert, who's, as we learned this morning, is done for the season with knee surgery. Trey Sermon is waiting in the weeds. You've also got Jamichael Hasty there. But Shanahan loves this Mitchell guy. All expectations are he's going to be the lead back. You talk about fab budget. It's always crazy in week 1. You don't want to blow the whole thing, but running backs are always super valuable in fantasy. Just, I guess the floor is yours, Joe, on Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of layers to this onion that we're going to have to try to peel back here. First and foremost, San Francisco surprised everybody, including the beat reporters. You know, I found it funny. I'm a trained journalist. I went to school for journalism. You know, you have these beat reporters at 1:05 Eastern, 11:05 your time, when the games kick off. They're like, well, you know, here's what happened. You know, Trent Sherfield outplayed Brandon Ayuk in training camp, and that's why they did this. And oh, you know, here's what happened. You know, Trey Sermon was outplayed by Elijah Mitchell and Jamichael Hasty. And you know what? Something that would have been really nice to have been brought to my attention yesterday. Like, you know, like, I understand maybe they had this in confidence and get all that. But it was obviously Kyle Shanahan dropping the hammer on these two guys. Now, when it comes to Mitchell, I see the Ayuk thing I don't think is going to continue. Like, I don't think Trent Sherfield is going to hold off Brandon Ayuk for the season. You know, this is like if you have a tricycle out ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, it's not going to happen. You might start ahead, but you know, eventually you're going to be behind. Thank you to Danny Rick for cashing me a ticket this weekend. But the Mitchell thing's really interesting because this is a guy, we have Greg Cosell, who, if you know him, he's on the ESPN matchup show, and he's just one of the most respected voices in the space in terms of film analysis. And he did rookie evaluations for us at Fantasy Points, and he watched Mitchell before he got drafted when he was at Louisiana Lafayette, and he said he's somebody who can catch the ball well, but he would fit really well in a foundational zone scheme. So I put that scouting report up, and one of our subscribers comes up to me, and he goes, Joe, does San Francisco run a foundational zone scheme? And I said, my man, San Francisco runs the foundational zone scheme. It is the offense that everybody wants to copy if you want to run zone blocking in the run game. Mitchell is interesting because this suggests he's earned more opportunities. He ran for 100 yards in his first game and a touchdown. So right now, Trey Sermon has an uphill climb. That being said, I am not closing the coffin on Trey Sermon. You know, this has been a backfield throughout Shanahan's tenure where multiple guys have produced, multiple guys have gotten opportunities. We're talking Raheem Mostert, obviously. He was an undrafted guy who went from practice squad to practice squad, ended up, you know, being a guy who playing in the Super Bowl. Tevin Coleman. Jeff Wilson was a league winner for people last year. Mitchell, obviously, here. Jeff Wilson's on the pup list. He'll come back at some point. So this, the book is not shut on Trey Sermon. If you had to ask me who would I rather roster right now, for sure it's Elijah Mitchell. He has now, as short a track record as it is, he has more on his resume than Trey Sermon has. And obviously, Shanahan does not give a crap where you were drafted. You have to earn snaps on his team. But this does not close the book on Trey Sermon by any stretch of the imagination. It could take a fumble, maybe an injury. But Trey Sermon's going to be active. He is going to be on this active roster, barring something unforeseen in week two following the injury to Mostert, and let's see what he does with his opportunities. That being said, Elijah Mitchell is the number one waiver wire pickup of the week.
He is Joe Dolan of Fantasy Points, fantasypoints.com. He's our guest every Tuesday, all things fantasy football. Anybody else, before I move on from running backs, anybody else that pops for you in week one that, you know, maybe it's not a waiver ad, but anything that jumps out to you for running backs in week one?
Well, number one, just for a guy who's not on the waiver wire, but you know, you might have been a little bit skeptical about, Joe Mixon had true bell cow usage. Let's just go with that. I mean, like, Joe Mixon had, I believe, 33 touches, 150 yards from scrimmage, and scored a touchdown. He played 31 snaps on run plays. That is the most of any running back in week one. It was bell cow work for Joe Mixon. So there's one. Let me throw a waiver wire guy out to you. And you might think I'm sounding like an idiot, but just stay with me here. You asked me about Mark Ingram, who had 26 carries in week one. Here's a player I'd rather have on my team than Mark Ingram. He plays for the Philadelphia Eagles. His name is Kenny Gainwell. He's a rookie running back. He's rostered in about 8% of Yahoo leagues as we speak. While Miles Sanders had over 100 yards from scrimmage in that game, Gainwell was exclusively Philly's hurry-up back. He had 9 for 37 rushing and 2 and 6 receiving. And for a rookie running back, he was exceptional in pass protection. He is going to get on the field in obvious passing situations. And because, you know, you have Jalen Hurts, the run game is going to be foundational to what the Eagles do. Kenny Gainwell is going to get snaps. I'd rather have somebody with that kind of upside than drive down a dead end that is Mark Ingram.
At the receiver group, I think all eyes were on the unfortunate injury for Jerry Jeudy, who we thought was going to be a breakout type season. That was an ugly injury. As you put on Twitter, though, it could have been so much worse.
Much worse.
Yeah. Your thought on Tim Patrick?
This is one of those guys who consistently, and I'm just going to throw a complete anecdote out there. Tim Patrick doesn't sound like a wide receiver name.
No.
Like, it's something like a kicker. Sounds like a Yeah, or a third string tight end or something. Yeah. And I swear to God, I think that's one of the reasons people are just like, oh, it's Tim Patrick. Like, but every time this guy gets an opportunity, he produces. Like, KJ Hamler is the go for the gusto pickup. By the way, I'm holding Jerry Jeudy if at all possible. Maybe you have a shallow bench and you don't have an IR spot. But if at all possible, I'm holding Jerry Jeudy. He was going to catch 10 passes in that game. KJ Hamler's the go for the gusto pick. He should have had a 50-yard touchdown. Teddy Bridgewater put it in the basket and Hamler dropped it. But Tim Patrick, every single time this guy gets an opportunity, it seems like third and six, that ball, whoever's been the quarterback for them, Drew Locke, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, third and six, that ball's going to Tim Patrick. He's somebody you can pick up, and I think he's more like a wide receiver four or a wide receiver five on your roster. But sometimes during the season, those guys who you can put in your lineup and say, you know what, that guy's going to catch me five passes for 50 yards, those guys have value, and Tim Patrick's that.
And before we move on from Denver, we talked last week about the Williams-Gordon split. What did you make of what you saw? I believe it was a 50% down the middle split for those two.
50-50 split, and now while Melvin Gordon's not going away, I think that's what's evident after week one, at least for now. Don't box score scout. Don't look at the box score and say Melvin Gordon had 101 rushing yards and Javonte Williams had 45 and say, oh my God, Javonte Williams. Melvin Gordon had a 70-yard touchdown run when that game was out of hand already. Like that, I mean, look, it happened. They're not going to bench Melvin Gordon and say, well, you had 101 yards with 70 were on one run, so you're benched. It's not going to happen. But for the most of the game, my opinion, Javonte Williams looked like the better back. But just for right now, expect that split to continue. But I said it all off season along. You weren't drafting Javonte Williams. Now, maybe a little bit of the late summer training camp hype had you buy in on him, start him week one. But you weren't really drafting Javonte Williams for week one and two and three. You were drafting Javonte Williams for weeks 14, 15, and 16. That was my assertion all off season. Much like happened with Jonathan Taylor last year, I think the same thing is going to happen with Javonte Williams. And I think it's a good sign, quite frankly, that he played half the team snaps in week one.
You look at the ownership percentage of Christian Kirk and you're like, how? Like, how is he not owned on more teams? He was obviously very good as the Cardinals trashed the Titans in Tennessee in week one. You and I were laughing and joking about A.J. Green as he said, I want to see it. Well, he didn't see much in week one from A.J. Yeah. Green. Your thoughts on Christian Kirk and should he be owned more than the 16% that we saw?
I have been loosey footballed so many times by this guy, Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk, Will, has 14 touchdowns in his career. 14 touchdowns. Nine of them have come in multiple touchdown games.
Wow.
So he has had quite literally three blow-up games in his career and nothing else.
He's the definition of boom or bust right there.
Yeah, and almost all the time has been bust. I'm not saying don't roster him. The guy who I'm identifying in that game as the guy I want on my roster is Rondale Moore. The rookie who came out and had a 4-for-68 in his first NFL game. Christian Kirk has teased me multiple times. Rondale Moore, I'm still wide-eyed here. I haven't been hurt yet. So Rondale Moore is the guy who I'm identifying here. I just think Kirk is one of those guys who's going to be a splash player. And Rondale Moore, I think, is a guy who has an opportunity to make more of a consistent impact with his dynamic skill set.
He's Joe Dolan, Fantasy Points, fantasypoints.com, our guest every single Tuesday for all things fantasy football. A couple more for you. One is completely self-serving from my co-host. He just asked me to ask you about this. So your thoughts on Cordarrelle Patterson in Atlanta?
Well, quite honestly, I thought he looked better than Mike Davis did. He had 7 carries for 54 yards, 2-for-13. I mean, the Eagles just walloped the Falcons. The Falcons offense, they got off to a good start running the football, but their offensive line got dominated later in that game, and that's the concern for me. But if he has running back eligibility in your league, I wouldn't mind tossing him a pickup. Like, I truly and honestly thought he looked better than Mike Davis in that game. He looked more explosive, harder to tackle, and obviously he gives you the receiving element as a former wide receiver. So if he has running back eligibility, I think he's a deep flyer to take. I'm just not very sure how good Atlanta's going to be.
Speaking of an absolute pounding, Green Bay Packers took it in the teeth.
Atlanta.
your thoughts on Jameis Winston, because the biggest knock was, you know, ball protection. He threw no mm-hmm. picks in that game. It's very clear that a year learning under Drew Brees and Sean Payton could be wonderful for this guy. You know, again, you're not going to blow your fab budget on Jameis Winston, but your thoughts on the Saints quarterback and the Saints offense as a whole, as they did take it to the Packers in Jacksonville.
So I don't want to take away from what the Saints did positively, because Jameis Winston did play well, but he threw 5 touchdowns for 148 passing yards. You might not be surprised to learn that he is the first quarterback in NFL history to throw for 5 touchdowns with fewer than 150 yards passing. You know, I had people asking me, oh my God, you guys loved Marquez Callaway. Well, it had 2 targets. I was like, dude, Jameis Winston threw the ball 20 times. There's somebody's not going to get a lot of targets out there. I mean, it's going to happen. So good news for them. Alvin Kamara, I thought Jameis starting was good news for Kamara. That bore out in week 1. He had 23 touches and a touchdown. Juwan Johnson, if you need a tight end, I would be scrambling to the waiver wire to see if this guy's on there in a deeper league. He didn't play a ton of snaps, but he's a former wide receiver. He is super talented. He scored 2 touchdowns. But ultimately, I think this was arguably one of the biggest no-shows I have ever seen in the NFL. Like the Packers, it's like they saw the Titans against the Cardinals and were like super inspired and were like, we're going to one-up these guys. We're going to really show the people what a no-show looks like. That was that. If the Packers come out Monday night and lay an egg against the Lions, I'm jumping out my window. I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm willing to look at this and just say, guys, I think this was a complete no-show by the Packers in much the same way they no-showed in Tampa Bay last year. Aaron Rodgers, for some reason, has a horrible record in Florida, but they no-showed in Tampa Bay last year. That is one where this is against a worse team, mind you, the Saints, but that is one where I think I'm just going to give Aaron Rodgers and his long resume the benefit of the doubt, as opposed to overreacting to this game. Because quite frankly, maybe deep down, I don't want to know what some of my teams are going to look like if that was anywhere close to the real Packers.
As we say goodbye on this Tuesday, Joe, anybody else that we didn't highlight that maybe should be getting some love on the waiver wire? Again, not big fab buys by any means, but anybody that we missed that should be brought to attention here?
Yeah, so Sterling Shepard of the New York Giants. I want you to go and look at his game log. And first and foremost, if you're not interested in the New York Giants after that crap fest, I don't blame you. I really don't. But go back and look at Sterling Shepard's game logs. He had 7 catches for 113 yards and a touchdown in week 1 against Denver. He was the only guy who did anything in that game. The last 2 games of 2020, 9 catches for 77 yards and a touchdown. 8 catches for 112 yards and a touchdown. And in that game, he had 2 carries for 24 yards and a touchdown. So Sterling Shepard has put up 3 massive games in a row. He's seen at least 5 targets in 11 straight games, dating back to when he came off of IR last year. Sterling Shepard is Daniel Jones' favorite receiver. I don't care that they signed Kenny Golladay. Sterling Shepard's his favorite receiver.
And do you like Aguilar?
Another tease.
I was going to say, kind of like Christian Kirk, who we talked about.
Yeah. I can endorse Aguilar. I would rather have Aguilar than Kirk. Let's put it that way.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Joe, good stuff, man. As always, you can follow Joe on Twitter at @FG_Dolan for all your fantasy needs. He's the man over at Fantasy Points. He's our guest every single Tuesday. Good luck in week 2, Joe. We'll talk to you next week, pal. Thank you.
All right, take it easy. Well, it was awesome.
Yeah, you bet.
Sportsnet 960's NFL Fantasy Insider Joe Dolan is brought to you by Gateway Mechanical. Switch and save 10% or more on your commercial HVAC or refrigeration maintenance. Learn more today at gatewaymechanical.ca/switch.
Great stuff from Joe. And again, you can check out all his work at fantasypoints.com. You can give him a follow on Twitter at @FG_Dolan. We'll take a break. When we come back, wrap up hour 2. On this afternoon program, it's, I guess, hour 1 of the Big Show, as we started with Hockey Central, but Big Show continues next, right here, from the iconic Electric End Controls downtown studio in Calgary, Alberta, on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on to the Big Show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Well, for golf fans, golf enthusiasts in this city, and specifically golf enthusiasts with kids, something pretty cool happening this week at Little Devil Golf Club coming up tomorrow. It is the Celebrity Junior Golf Drive. The celebrities, pretty solid crew. Jordan Eberle, Kelly Rudy, friend to the program, station colleagues like Pinder and Wills and Francis and Parker. You've got Colin Patterson. It's a good group of celebrities. But what I really like is the cause and the drive. Welcome back to the program. We welcome in our good buddy Kevin Smith of Alberta Golf. Mr. Smith, appreciate the time this afternoon. Tell us about what's happening tomorrow. I told you about the celebrities. The Celebrity Junior Golf Drive is about more than just the people playing, though. There's a really important cause behind this, too, isn't there?
Oh, you bet, Pat. And it's great to hear your voice. Thanks for having me on. And just a great opportunity to talk a little bit about junior golf. I think what we've seen in the last couple of years, in these COVID times, that a lot of the activities that some kids in our province can't do, unfortunately, but they've gravitated to golf because it's one of the things you can do and it's safe and you're outside and you can social distance. And we've seen a real uptick in juniors discovering the game. Golf's for everyone. And we have a program called Youth on Course that we run through Alberta Golf. And it started in the States, and it's really popular down there. We were the first province to bring it up here. And we have 18 golf courses in Alberta that allow kids to come and play for $5. And I think the perception that, you know, all kids grow up in some private club where, you know, their parents are members, some do, but predominantly most don't. And they can't afford $20 and $30 rounds when they're 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. So the way the program works is the 18 clubs, the kids play for $5, and then Alberta Golf subsidizes that. And in 2019, we had 1,000 rounds played in Youth on Course, and last year it exploded to 8,000 rounds. So you can imagine when you subsidize 8,000 rounds, you throw in $10, $15, you know, there's $100,000 right there. And we want this program to be sustainable for years to come. So this is the first year we're doing the Junior Golf Drive. The celebrities you mentioned, we've had them behind this for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and we've had it on our website and on social media, and donations are coming in. And for anyone listening, if you're trying to think of a cause to donate to, if you're passionate about golf, this is certainly a good one because it breaks down barriers for youth
for
to
sure.
discover the game and play the game and make it affordable for them.
It's one of the things that, you know, there is definitely, and I think that what this program is doing is a huge reason in breaking down some of those stigmas, but there can be a stigma of it being a rich person's sport, and all. It doesn't have to be. It really doesn't have to be, and this is a great way to get young people into the game and a great way to develop the sport in this province at a grassroots level, isn't it?
Absolutely. And in my new life now, in my third year away from television and just being in the golf industry full time as the communication director for Alberta Golf, I'm on golf courses every day around the province. And I've seen it with my own eyes. Like our junior tour has exploded, sold out events. We're very inclusive. We're all about safe sport. And we're just seeing the diversity. Even the 3 years that I've been involved, it's amazing to see how many 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds are coming out to our Learn to Compete tours and discovering the game. And obviously the golf industry, it's not beating its chest, but it's been one of the things you can do. And a lot of kids are discovering the sport. And this is just one of the really good programs that certainly I'm proud of that we're breaking down cost barriers for youth. And tomorrow's event, we're praying for good weather we've got a fun little format going on at Little Devil tomorrow. What we're going to do is we're going to pair up our celebrity players who are all passionate about golf, and you name them off, and we all know them quite well. And we're pairing them up with a representative from one of the Youth on Course courses. So people are driving up from Medicine Hat, driving down from Edmonton, and we're all going to converge at Little Devil and have a fun format tomorrow to hopefully raise some more money for Youth on Course.
That's awesome. Where can we find out more about Youth on Course and about the program, Kev?
Go to our website, albertagolf.org, and you'll see it right on the front page. You'll also see it in our first drop-down under events. You can click on it and read all about it. Pick a celebrity that maybe is close to your heart, and you know, donate to Youth on Course. No matter who you donate through, it all goes to the same bucket, and it's all going to be used to subsidize this great program. You know, it was incredible to me, Pat. Even 2 weeks ago, Lanny McDonald called me and said, "I've seen your junior golf drive. I want to come. I want to play in this thing. I've got some ideas of how to, you know, to donate to junior golf." So, you know, how incredible is that? Just to have Lanny McDonald want to be part of this. So, little double tomorrow. If anyone's listening, you're free to come down and watch and just kind of see what it's all about. My staff will be there. The Slubbers will be there. Youth on Course will be there. And we're going to have a fun day raising money for our program.
Awesome stuff. And again, you can donate if you can't make it at albertagolf.org. Thanks, Kev. Good luck tomorrow, man.
Thanks, Pat. Great to hear your voice, and keep up the great work, buddy.
Thank you, brother. Good to hear from you. Kevin Smith from Alberta Golf, albertagolf.org, if you would like to help donate and support the Youth on Course program. Sounds like the Sens and Brady Tkachuk are moving close to a long-term deal, and we want to follow up that chat on Jack Eichel from yesterday, too. Advance it a little further as the big show rolls on. We're back in two on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're listening to The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Just over a week from training camp starting across the league, and Jack Eichel remains a member of the Buffalo Sabres. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, and we kind of came to the conclusion, and we were on the same page, that Eichel going back to Buffalo and actually playing games as a member of the Sabres is a real possibility. Had you brought that up in like July, you would have been like, no, he's never playing another game for the Sabres. Well, you know, the season starts in less than a month, we're less than a month from the start of the season, or right up on a month. And the way things are going right now and the way things have quieted on the Eichel trade talk, yeah, I think that has to be a possibility. But for the sake of this conversation, do you see any teams that might or could still be able, or that you could make a case should be interested in making a deal for him right now and waiting however long it takes, whether it's the disc replacement or the neck fusion, waiting however long it takes to get him into the roster, but still making the deal, still making that deal, giving up whatever it takes? Are there teams that can do that? Are there teams that you could see that could end up still getting this done between now and the start of the regular season?
I think it's becoming harder to imagine myself. The biggest thing for me is that he's got a $10 million cap hit. And everything you hear out of Buffalo or from a league-wide insider is that they want futures. Mm-hmm. So if you want futures, well, who can fit a $10 million cap hit right now? Not a lot of teams. The one team that does jump out is the one that John Hovind mentioned earlier, and that's the Anaheim Ducks. Yep. Because right now, with no questions asked, they could fit him in their cap without trading significant money the other way.
Yeah, they would not have to make a financial move to make this happen.
The one guy that, you know, obviously would be the biggest hiccup or perhaps the guy that's, you know, the eye of the Buffalo Sabres is Trevor Zegras, who played a handful of games for Anaheim this past season. He's still on his entry-level contract. He would count as a quote-unquote future. The other name would be Mason McTavish, who they just took in the top 10 of this previous draft. But again, if you're Anaheim, are you giving up the future of your franchise in Zegras and McTavish for a team that I said this for the longest time. I think Ryan Pinder was the one who goes, oh, Anaheim's going to have no rebuild because they've got so many good guys coming up. Well, that's not the case. They're going to be bad unless they make a move. And as good as Zegras and McTavish are, that's two guys.
Yep.
And everybody else right now on their team is, you know, older or not franchise pieces. Maxime Contois is a good player, but he's not a franchise piece. Max Jones is not a franchise piece. Troy Terry is not a franchise piece. And those are all guys that already are creeping into their mid-20s. So if you're the Anaheim Ducks and you can for sure make that deal right now and fit him in on your team, which is great, But are you making that trade without knowing what that neck looks like and without, you know, knowing or seeing Jack Eichel back in a game situation post-surgery? Like, you want to give up Mason McTavish or a Trevor Zegras before even seeing that? I find that hard to believe.
See, now that the Ducks have one more blue chip prospect, before the draft, when Anaheim was really hotly being linked to Eichel, the talk was they're really interested, but they don't want to give up Drysdale. They don't want to give up Zegras.
Who are their two blue chippers? Now they've got three.
Maybe right?
Four. I think it depends how you view Zellweger.
And you know what? Like, Olin Zellweger is looked at as a really, really good prospect and was essentially a first-round pick, was two picks
so
in
they've got
the second round.
Yeah, they've got four pieces that Buffalo would probably be interested in.
And you throw in first-round picks, maybe you can get away with one of them. Maybe you can get away
three.
With McTavish and Zellweger, or McTavish and Lindstrom and a couple of firsts. And then all of a sudden, maybe you've got Buffalo's attention. And Anaheim, you're right. They don't need to send Henrique the other way or something like that to make the money work. They've got $13 million in cap space. Welcome to the team, Jack.
So that's the one team that jumps out almost immediately. Obviously, Detroit would be super intriguing, but that doesn't strike me as a move that Steve Yzerman would make right now.
What about Minnesota?
At this point, they can't afford it.
You take a look at Minnesota, you're like, they got $12 million
no
in cap space,
no
but
chance.
They don't have Kaprizov signed.
And they've got $14, $13 million in cap space of dead money the next 3 years. I would, to take Peter Labardius's phrase, I would put Minnesota on the no chance motel.
Unless they're willing to do something financially.
Before those buyouts, I could probably see it. But now with those buyouts, and that money is significant. Like, we're not talking $3 million in dead cap space. We're talking about almost three players at 12.7 and then 13.7 the next 2 years, or 14.7. That's significant money.
Well,
for a cap that might increase by $1 million, $2 million. We're not talking about this thing all of a sudden jumping to $91 million in the next 2 years. So if you're Minnesota, that's a really hard trade to make, especially when you're trying to figure out what Kaprizov's price point is going to be. And by all accounts, Pat, it's probably going to be between $8 and $9 million. So
if not a little higher,
all of a sudden, you know, Minnesota is pretty much in the no chance motel.
And it's not like they've got anything that you would just say, well, automatically there's your financial player. They're like, there's not that guy that's like, well, there's a contract that Buffalo will just take on and that'll make the money work, right? So it makes it that much more difficult for
them. Here's a dark horse team for you. The Ottawa Senators.
Be amazing for them. But would the thing that, I know Eichel has no trade protection. I know that he does not choose where he wants to go. But if you're a team acquiring a guy where there's already question marks, I make this conversation about Calgary, and I've heard plenty to suggest that, you know, Eichel may not be super thrilled about going to a Canadian team because Montreal's been connected, and I've heard plenty that would suggest that, maybe not suggest, but plenty of innuendo that said, well, maybe he's not super thrilled.
That's a narrative that's becoming louder and louder around the league.
It really is. And do you want to take that risk of bringing in a guy that isn't super keen on playing, even though he doesn't have a choice of where he plays? Do you want to take that risk?
Here's the one pushback that I would put on that topic. If you're Jack Eichel, yeah, you might not be thrilled about going to Canada, but wouldn't you look at it as a great chance to rebuild your image and say, look, it didn't work in Buffalo. I admit that. Yes, I was certainly part of that, but the franchise was also part of that. But wouldn't that be a great chance to rebuild it and kind of rebrand yourself?
Because, I think so.
You know, he might not view it that way, but if you're Pat Brisson in that agency, I think that would be the one thing you sell him on. Like, look at Jack. Yes, this is not our top of the list. We want it to go to Manhattan. We want it to go to California. But this is a great chance to maybe end up in New York one day. And, you know, end up in a place that you want to get to. Because if you continue this path that you're on and you go to an Ottawa or a Calgary or, you know, somewhere that's less desirable for him, a New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And you still put up this whiny attitude. Well, you're probably not going to be looked at when you hit the open market as a guy that everyone's lining up to get.
And I like, if I'm Eichel and I know that he has got some leverage here and I know that he is a really good, but if I were him, most places, and I'm not even taking a shot at Buffalo, the city, I'm taking a shot at Buffalo, the organ. Get me the hell out of Buffalo. Like, anywhere is better than Buffalo right now. That Sabres team has been a disaster every single year he's been there. And I'm sorry, like, is Ottawa the sexiest city in the NHL? No. Is Calgary the sexiest spot in the NHL? No. But if you don't want to go to one of those places, or Newark or wherever, like, it's still better than Buffalo. The situation is to, and you know what? You can live a pretty good life at $10 million. You could live a good life in Prince Albert or Prince George, or like anywhere, Great Falls, Montana, anywhere. You can live a pretty good life at that. You can find life. You can find ways to make life awesome in any spot. So if I were him, that's the way I'd be looking at it, but I don't know if that's the way he is.
They're a dark horse team for me, and the reason why I would put them in the dark horse category, they're not in the bad or less desirable, you know, location conversation, but they're in the spot of, do they have the pieces to make a trade that Buffalo says yes on? A dark horse for me is Nashville.
Ooh, that would be...
They've got cap space, but they don't necessarily have pieces that I think Kevin Adams and the Sabres are like, yes, we want to get that. And that might be what holds them out of this entire thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because if they're looking for futures, if they're truly looking to once again rebuild, you know, can you look at Nashville and sell me or give me a trade? It's probably a little bit tougher because they're a team that consistently is picked in the bottom half of the draft. And, you know, maybe you can trade, you know, a goaltender. Like, you know, you could, the Russian kid that was picked in the top 10 last year, you could probably trade him.
Askarov.
Yeah. But again, that's one piece, right? And so, That would be the other dark horse for me. And if you're Jack Eichel, I think you'd love to be in Nashville. But, you know, outside of that, again, just based on the cap situation, I don't see that list being overly long for destinations for Jack Eichel at this point.
From a Flames standpoint, I would have no problem with them making the deal and not having him until November, December. But knowing what they are attempting to do and knowing that they would have to involve somebody on the roster to make the deal work, there's no, like Matthew Tkachuk or Sean Monahan or Johnny Gaudreau or somebody of that dollar figure, that cap hit, that ballpark would have to move if the Flames were to go and acquire Jack Eichel. I'm a little more skeptical that they'd be okay to make the deal and not have him until December or January or something like that, because this is a year where it's looked at like they want to get back in the playoffs. Now, to play devil's advocate on myself, if ownership signs off on that type of deal, it's more than just this year, so you probably give yourself a flyer on this year, but it makes me a little bit more skeptical that it would happen now that we're so late in the game from a Flames standpoint. I'd be okay with it. I just don't know whether or not the organization would end up being okay with it when it's all said and done. Speaking of a Tkachuk, not Matthew, but Brady. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about that. We played that clip from Frank Saravelli. And a report comes out today from Bruce Garriott in Ottawa that indeed, it sounds like Ottawa is about to table an 8x8 to Brady Tkachuk, which if he says yes to, if they agree at that framework, I don't think it's a loss for Brady. Like, that's $64 million. You're doing fine. But for where the Senators are and what we just talked about being a less desirable location, I think that's a win for the Sens if they can get him to sign for 8x8.
And even if he counters at 8.5, I still think it gets done, right? Like, if he says, you're close, but yep, I want 8.5,
yep,
I think Ottawa says, okay, we'll do that. And I think, you know, both sides, it's a massive win. If they get this player, and I go back to what you talked about yesterday, because I'm with you, I think Ottawa's for sure in the bottom five of destinations across the NHL. They can get that guy to commit for 8 years, it's a huge, huge win. And the only reason I say there might be the counter from the Tkachuk camp, and this is just pure speculation on my part, but there might be the thought of, we want to be the highest paid player on the team, and Thomas Chabot makes 8, so we want to get 8.5.
Yep.
Wouldn't you have offered him 8x8 already?
Apparently not.
I would have.
Well,
I'm not sure why I'd wait till September.
Brady might have been looking
at
short-term.
You make hockey decisions, though?
Yeah, only Pierre Dorion does, man.
Pierre Maguire does.
Oof.
Pierre squared.
There's an unrated.
Pierre Dorion makes hockey decisions. I get great support from Mr. Melnick, but Pierre Dorion makes hockey decisions.
Okay. Nothing like talking about yourself in the third person.
I would have, like, eight, but you know what? It might have started, Logo, with a bridge deal. It might have started with a scenario where they were like, we'll go a little shorter term. And but if the Tkachuk camp is open to going 8 years, I'm going past
it. It just seems odd to me because I don't know why Ottawa would ever be interested in a bridge unless that's all the Tkachuk camp was interested in.
And maybe that was the case from the get-go. Who knows?
It's just, to me, if that's the guy that you think is your kind of build-around guy on the forward side of thing, I would have tabled eight to him from day one.
Is he the next captain in Ottawa?
I could see it, for sure. I mean, if you're...
Does that come with the contract?
Maybe.
Especially now that Eric Goodbranson's out of the way.
Especially if it's 8 years...
He was traded at the deadline, Logo, to Nashville.
Come on, Logs.
He was out of the way before then.
Come on, Logs. You going to make the case for Cole Sherwood? Is that what you're doing?
Cole Sherwood.
Biggest claim to fame is getting
decked by Isn't that the guy that
Lucic.
Got drilled by Lucic? Yeah.
He
when he was in Columbus.
That's yeah, he story. Poked at Riddick and Lucic.
Just lost his face. He got suspended for that, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he sure did. Same season that Zadorov, I think, gave him yep. the business behind the net.
Yep.
But yeah... Again, I think if it's 8x8 or 8x8.5, if that's what Ottawa's getting set to table the offer, I'm with Logo. I mean, they probably should have done that earlier in the summer. But either way, if that's what they're getting ready to prepare for the Tkachuk camp, I don't see how this doesn't get done and how he isn't there day one of training camp. Whether it's $8 million or his camp counters at 8.5, like I said yesterday, within reason, I'm giving that guy whatever he wants.
And I mean, even if it is 8x8, like honestly, how much would Tkachuk be leaving on the table with $64 million? A few million dollars? You've got 64. Like, is the difference between 64 and 67 that much? Probably not. And just quickly, we talked
and
a little bit about this.
Immediately making more money than your brother.
Yep, immediately. Just to, when we wrapped up Hockey Central in the 1 o'clock hour, we talked about this. Eric Francis reports the Flames 100% vaccinated heading into the regular season. Toronto Maple Leafs, Carolina Hurricanes 100% vaccinated. You brought up a really good point. Like the fact that you're not socially distancing in meetings. And if you go take a look at the NHL protocols, the disparity between vaccinated and unvaccinated players is large. It is NFL, NBA large. And here's the other thing that I think might push if the NHL goes down this road, because I don't know if this part has been 100% finalized yet and can change, but the NBA, Shams at the Athletic just came out with this earlier today in the NBA. Unvaccinated players, you're getting tested daily. You need negative tests to play. Vaccinated players, not getting tested. No, like no regular testing for vaccinated players in the NBA this year. If the NHL goes that way, that might push more teams towards 100% because hesitancy and all that type of stuff. I think it's a great example to see as many professional teams, as many professional athletes as are rolling up the sleeve. I think that's a really good example and a really good thing. And there's just more incentive to get it done. If you're not having to go to the rink early to get tested every day and you can just go about your business normally, that's a big time win if you're a player.
It is. And I don't think it's a massive competitive advantage. Like if you've got everybody vaccinated and you can be in meeting rooms, I don't think it makes you five wins better. But yeah, I do think it's a massive plus for whatever coaching staff. And I think they would be, you know, thrilled to have that, you know, kind of obstacle out of the way. Of course, you're still going to get potential positive cases. But the other thing too, Pat, is with a team that's 100% vaccinated, if you get a player who tests positive, that player is going to come back a lot quicker
yep.
than a player who's not vaccinated. So, I think it's a fairly large advantage. It's hard to quantify, but I think it's very important. And I'll be curious to see how many teams get to that point here before October 16th or October 12th. And puck drop. Before we get out of this segment, can we just quickly
yeah.
talk about Andrew Mangiapane's art skills? Because they're no good.
How do they compare to Thomas Chabot's? Because Thomas Chabot in Ottawa
yeah,
was
that's
the first.
A good point. Yeah,
they're both awful.
Yeah, the cowboy hat, I think,
all
on the Sens.
All of the ones that they did were awful.
I think you had the Chabot had the cowboy hat on the Sens guy in the logo, which I was like, I don't understand that part. But Mangiapane going with the straight C and then just a few flames on the outside.
It's a really bad rendition from Mange, I'm not going to lie.
There's a lot of people saying they would buy that T-shirt if they put that on a shirt. So Brent Gibbs, get to work. Put that on a shirt. Let's go. And the other thing, too, is a lot of people saying there's some pretty good meme potential in the future for that. So we'll see what happens.
If you don't know what we're talking about, just NHL Flames on Twitter. It's their avatar right now is the very poorly drawn attempt at the Calgary Flames logo from Andrew Mangiapane at the NHL Media Tour in Toronto. We're live in the Iconic Studio this afternoon. Logo, Steinberg, Nault with you this afternoon. Iconic Studio powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Diversity, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Big Show's live on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
So we got a bunch of motor mouths on afternoons, eh? They're not done talking yet. It's The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Big Show rolls on a Tuesday afternoon alongside Will Nault, Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thursday, we are on location, Prentice Greens Golf and Country Club, looking forward to the 27th running of the Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament with all proceeds going to cerebral palsy kids and families. Speaking of the Flames alumni, let's say hello to former Flames defenseman, Stanley Cup winner, and Calgary Flames, proud Calgary Flames alumni member, the one and only Dana Merzen joins us on the program.
Standing
right
at 5 foot
now.
Six, he's Dana Merzen. Oh, no, that's wrong.
Different guy.
Sorry.
Different guy.
My mistake.
Mr. Merzen, what's going on?
Not too much. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, doing well. Are you ready to rock for Thursday?
Well, we're getting there for sure.
What tell us about preparations.
Well, I picked up all the signage today and getting all the goody stuff ready to put in the bags and putting the final touches on with the last-minute organization, getting the last golfer names in, and then we should be good to go and have a great day.
So this the 27th running, and it's got to be good to be back. I would imagine that it just it's been a abnormal last year and a half, so something normal, and to have this at regular
all day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We
sorry find about the that. Good stuff. Has to be pretty nice to kind of feel like things are back to normal. Hey, Dana.
Yeah, you know, we're getting there. I know we're not out of the woods yet, but I think we can have the tournament in a safe fashion, and so we decided we'd go ahead with it. You know, the one thing with the pandemic was the needs of all our charitable aspects still need to be met, and that was a tough year for them. So yeah. Hopefully we'll get out, have a lot of fun, be able to see some people again, and raise some money for CP Kids and Family.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. So since the Masters Golf Tournament started, more than $2.7 million has been raised. And since Cerebral Palsy Kids and Families has become the primary beneficiary of the tournament, we're talking about more than 1,800 kids that have been able to just experience riding a bike that probably wouldn't have been able to do so before. Dana, how come CP Kids and Families has become so close to the hearts of the Flames alumni?
Well, you know what? It started off, they basically, you know, put an application like anyone did for the tournament, and we went through everything, and we thought it, it was a charity that had very little overhead. Shirley Stetler, you know, has been doing a great job there, basically running it by herself. With, you know, she has some help there. I don't want to forget everybody else, Trish Crispin, a bunch of people down there. But we thought it was something that we could raise awareness for. And when we went to a couple of the bike clinics, when you see these children getting fitted for these adapted bikes and the freedom they get and the joy that's on their face and just the you know, the freedom of movement for someone that might not have it. We take it for granted every day. It was just really touching. And to see the money that's raised go directly to the bikes for these children, we just thought it was a great fit.
Dana Merzen's with us, Calgary Flames alumni. The Alumni Masters Golf Tournament is Thursday at Prentice Greens Golf and Country Club. I've talked to Patter, I've talked to Lenny, I've talked to Perry, other members of the alumni, and just it's pretty amazing when you see the bike delivered to the different kids, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not just the children. It's the freedom it gives the family. It gives them an option to go for a family bike ride with their parents and their brothers and sisters. it's just a real special feeling to see that freedom and see the joy that it brings everybody involved. Absolutely.
Who are, I don't think I've ever asked this before. Like, you know your alumni members pretty well. It's a pretty tight-knit group. Who's good? Like, who are the good golfers? Who do we need to look out for on Thursday?
Who do we need to look out for? Well, I think Curtis Glencross is pretty good. Corey Sarich, you know, you got the old guys like Lanny that still hit a good ball. Unfortunately, we're going to miss Joel this year. He's sidelined with waiting for a hip, which is too bad. He's one of the better golfers for sure. You know, actually, most of the guys are pretty decent. There's the odd guy out there that doesn't golf that much, but, you know, most of them strike pretty good ball.
Surprised Glenn Cross has time to golf with 12 kids, but good for him. I'm sure that's a busy schedule for him. What about you, Dana? Where's the golf game this summer?
Well, I go in that pretty average category. I'm a 16 handicap, so I might come up with a shot here or two, but I'm not the guy you want on your team if you're trying to win the thing, that's for sure.
So you mentioned the first two guys that you mentioned were Glenn Cross and Sarich. Like these new alumni members, they're starting to become a bit of a thorn in the side, hey?
No, actually, it's great to have them out and getting them involved. You know, it's kind of wonderful. We're all getting old. Our drives are getting short. So, you know, they got to keep the rep up for these retired hockey players. So it's a good thing to have them out there.
And all of a sudden, the pace on the ice at the alumni game is a little quicker.
Yeah, well, then, you know, we always say we were always fighting for ice time, and you want to be the guy that played 40 minutes a game, and now you're happy with the regular shift minus one once in a while. So, yeah, it's even better to have them out there skating with us.
Tell us about the event itself. If you know, this year it's a little late, but in going forward, if you've never golfed in the Alumni Masters Golf Tournament, Dana, just how much fun is the event itself?
Well, I think it's a blast. You know, for one, you see a bunch of alumni guys that don't see each other all that often getting together. And the nice thing about retired guys is they don't mind having a beer and telling a few stories, a little more relaxed. The day is actually just a great day. It's fun. It's relaxed. You know, you can have a beer if you want. Great food out in the course. You know, usually we'd have an event the night before, but this year we decided to go to an online platform just, you know, for safety and whatnot. So our fundraising, most of it this year is actually being done online. Mm-hmm. We're doing the online auction, which I guess is good. It gives access to a lot more people. And then we'll have a live auction at the tournament and a dinner and a wrap up. But if I give a shout out, if anyone wants to check out all the auction items, then there's a raffle as well for a wine collection and a small wine cellar from Willow Park and some other wonderful things. If you go to www.calgarycp.org, it's got all the links to the online auction. So it's kind of nice this year because it makes it available to everybody out there in the community.
Yep. I'm perusing the different items right now. You've got some great hotel stays, some great memorabilia, some great golf getaways, some really good stuff. And once again, you can get there very easily by going to calgarycp.org. We'll be on location at Prittis Greens Golf and Country Club. We'll see you out there on Thursday. Thanks for spending some time with us today, Dana. Good luck with the final preparations. We'll see you in a couple days.
Okay, thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it. We'll see you on Thursday.
He's Dana Merzen, former Flames defenseman, Stanley Cup winner, big part of the Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament. Since 1994, the tournament's raised over $2.7 million, and for the last 10 years, Cerebral Palsy Kids and Families has been the main charitable beneficiary. They do incredible things at CP Kids and Families, and yeah, you go take a look at the auction items. If you can't golf this year, if you've golfed before and aren't able to, if you're just interested in helping out, the website, once again, is calgarycp.org. Morning show and the big show on location at Prittis Greens Golf and Country Club for the tournament on Thursday. The big show rolls on around the corner. The Stampeders are in a game week coming off a win. That has not been the most normal thing for them this year, but it's a game week coming off a win, and Matty Rose has got the latest, including some award news on the Stampeders report coming up next. Stay with us on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the big show with Pat Steinberg and Will Nault. Time for the Stampeders report. My name's Matt Rose. Stamps coming off a win up in Edmonton. They're now 2-4 on the season, preparing for a Friday night tilt in Steeltown against the 2-3 Hamilton Tiger Cats. Hasn't been a common start to the season for the Stamps. Uncharacteristically, they've lost several games at home, but they'll look to build some momentum off their game up in Edmonton. And both of Calgary's road games have gone pretty well this season. A win in Edmonton, then a narrow loss to a good Winnipeg team back in Week 4. Dave Dickinson talked about how his team has played on the road this season after Tuesday's practice.
Well, when the schedule came out, I knew this was going to be a tough stretch. I knew this game in particular was going to be tough because you can always kind of reload for that rematch with Edmonton. But, you know, playing on 5 days and then playing on the road again in 6 days, I knew this was going to be the best or the biggest challenge, I would say, on our schedule. Knowing as well that Hamilton's such a great team and plays so well at home. So, yes, we've played better on the road, but we know this is a huge challenge. And hopefully we have gained some momentum from our last win and we can get out of Steeltown with a W.
An outstanding showing for the defense against Edmonton last weekend. Richard Leonard had an interception. The defense had 7 sacks, including 3 for both veteran Sean Lemon and CFL newcomer Stephon Banks. They held the league's leading rusher, James Wilder Jr., to a season-low 62 yards on the ground, and the league's leading passer, Trevor Harris, only amounted to 221 yards through the air, also a season-low. Safety Royce Metchie says the team is improving on defense each week, then they continue to set a higher standard for themselves.
We hold ourselves to a very high standard, and with that being said, you know, we go out there every week and we try to execute to the best that we can. We were fortunate last week that we were able to execute more plays than we have previously, and as a result we were able to hold the team to 0 touchdowns. Like you said, the standard is always moving. There's like, we have a saying, like, as long as we keep getting better, like, that's like the new floor, you know what I'm saying? So if we improve last week from the week before, that is now like the new foundation.
Stephon Banks was actually named one of the players of the week following his performance. 7 tackles, 3 for sacks, and a fumble recovered for the 24-year-old who was playing in just his 4th CFL game. He was one of 2 players on the Stamps honored by the CFL, the other being receiver Kamar Jordan, who has a commanding lead on receiving yards across the league, 516 through 6 games, tied for 2nd in receiving touchdowns as well with 3. The veteran receiver is back to his all-star form that we saw in 2018 before a knee injury ended his year early and wiped out all but the final game of the 2019 campaign for the 32-year-old. Denny Austin of Post Media asked the veteran about being back to where he was in 2018, leading the league in receiving yards.
It's definitely dope. And John had texted me earlier and let me know and kind of gave me the little stats. It's definitely good to be able to kind of get back to that position where I was. But, you know, with me, like, I'm always kind of looking at other things. And with me, it's all about just finishing. Next game, playing the next game, just making it through the season, taking care of my body and making sure I'm available. That's the most important thing for me, staying on the field, staying healthy for my team and being out there and being able to lead on the field. And just staying. I haven't finished the season since I've been up here. So that's kind of it. All the stats and mid-season stats is good, but I want to be able to say that at the end of the year, I'm still standing and standing with my team.
12 catches, 159 yards, and a touchdown against Edmonton earned him that Player of the Week honor, a key touchdown late in the game that also gave Calgary the lead in point differential, ultimately winning the season series against the Elks. You might have caught the Elks celebration in the end zone as well, just a little fuel for the fire as the Stamps left Commonwealth with a win.
It's the Battle of Alberta. Like, I feel like, why not kind of spark that rivalry back up? It was a tough game, the 2 games. They was talking a lot of trash. We was talking a lot of trash. They was hitting, bringing a little extra hits and all that stuff like that. And they got a little dances in too now. Like the last game, I don't know if TSN got it, but they was doing a little rodeo dance and all that stuff too. And I seen that. So just had the last opportunity. I just had to let them know, like, we won. We won the series at the end of the day. So however they want to feel about this, whatever, it is what it is. They want to see us again, see us in playoffs.
And some injury notes looking ahead to Friday's game. Herjee Mayala, the receiver, did not practice. He's been working through a muscle strain for a little while now, so Tyson Middlemost was getting most of the reps in the Canadian wideout position.
Well, he's been fighting a muscle pull for a couple weeks, and with the short week last week, he still played the whole game, so sure hoping he can go out there and play. We had to rest a couple guys, unfortunately, today. Would like to see him out there tomorrow.
Defensive back Jonathan Moxie and receiver Josh Huff both limited as well, although head coach Dave Dickinson did say that he's hopeful there'll be options for Friday.
I think both have a good chance to play, but I'm not really that concerned if neither one practices. I'd rather have them practicing, but I think they know what they're doing, having good years. If they're good to go, I'd like to play them.
The team has been thin at offensive line. Two starters on the six-game injured list in Ryan Sevier and Julian Good-Jones. Leon Johnson's been on the practice roster, but he's been banged up as well. National offensive lineman Jonathan Zamora was able to practice after he missed time with injury. Gives the team another option for keeping Bo Levi Mitchell upright with that national guard position.
He's back. Yep, he's back. So now still was basically a rookie, but gives us another option, thank gosh. And you know, we've been kind of decimated there. So, you know, we'll see how the lineup plays out. Had a few guys not able to participate fully today. So John's definitely in the mix.
Ucombre Williams, the all-star left tackle, he's been banged up and limited in action as well. Back on Saturday was the sixth lineman, where typically he'd be your starter at left tackle. We'll have to see if he can go against the Tabbies Friday with a bye week on the other side of the contest. Defensive back Jamar Wall also practicing Tuesday, not eligible to return this week, but could be a nice addition to the secondary coming out of the bye after he suffered a calf injury in week one. Brandon Dozier's acclimated to the Sam spot really well in Wall's absence, so it'll be interesting to see how the team lines up their secondary once Wall is able to return. For the Ticats on the injury front, they're going to be without quarterback Dane Evans. He is on the injured list with a oblique injury, got injured in their week 6 contest, so either Jeremiah Masoli or David Watford will get the call for the Tabbies Friday, but they're going to wait to announce their starter. Matthew Schinetti of TSN reported on Monday that Watford was taking the majority of snaps on Monday. The third-year CFL quarterback went 6 for 10 for 78 yards in relief of Dane Evans in their loss to the Argonauts. In his CFL career, Watford is 26 for 50 with 320 yards passing, a TD, and 2 interceptions. Masoli has been hampered by both ribs and elbow injuries. He's now in his 8th CFL year. He is only dressed for 3 games in this campaign, weeks 1 and 2, then in backup capacity week 4 against Montreal. Dave Dickinson talked about the challenge that his club faces preparing for the Ticats offense, with either Watford or Masoli going to start on Friday.
I'm not sure who it's going to be. I'm sure Coach O is not to get a lot of information on that, but we just want to try to trust our eyes. They do a lot of misdirection. They run a lot of stuff. They've got speed, they got playmakers, they play with an edge. So the quarterback is pivotal in all wins and losses in the CFL. We know that. I'm sure they're going to, you know, obviously make the best decision, what's best for their team, not only for this week, but long term. And whoever shows up will be expected to win. So we got to play well.
And that was something that linebacker Darnell Sankey also addressed after Tuesday's practice.
I think we just go into every single game with the same mindset. You know, we go into just, preparing for whoever's up. You know, we think, you know, best person will play, and whoever they see fit is the one who's going to play. They're both great quarterbacks, but really it doesn't matter in terms of our preparation. We just, you know, we prepare to really do our thing against both. So, I mean, we're not like switching up the defense or doing nothing like that. No, we're running our calls and we're doing what we got to do.
For the Tiger Cats, outstanding receiver Brandon Banks also missed last week's game on the one game injured list. He got popped in the Labor Day matchup in Hamilton against the Argos and has a rib injury. Did not practice on Monday with that injury. Fellow receivers Breelan Addison and Devere Posey, both eligible to come off the 6-game injured list. They were both limited on Monday. Running back Sean Thomas Erlington also limited, while on the defense, standout interior lineman Ted Laurent missed practice. Big matchup coming for the Stamps Friday. They'll try to move to 3-4 ahead of their first bye of the season in Week 8. With your Stampeders report, I'm Matt Rose.
Thank you very much, Matty. Yeah, looking forward to the Stamps and Ticats this weekend. We told you that we're live on location coming up this week, Thursday at Pretty Screens Golf and Country Club for the Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament. And then the following day, we're back at the Wild Rose Tap Room. Join us Friday at the Tap Room, as we'll be there from 2 until 6 o'clock in the Curry Barracks. We'll be celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Wild Rose Tap Room, telling you all about the menu, the great selection of beers on tap, and the fact that you're talking about one of the best patios in the city. It's dog friendly. When it's warm out, there's not a better spot to be than the Wild Rose Tap Room. Come on down, say hi to us. We'll be there from 2 until 6 on Friday afternoon. Looking forward to it as the Big Show's back in YYC. We're back at bars. We're back at sports bars. We're back at golf courses and all kinds of different spots, and happy to be back out and about in the city here on the Big Show. He's Will. He's Logan. I'm Pat. Logo is around the corner with the biggest stories of the day. Stay tuned for headlines about 3 minutes away. Big Show rolls on next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Save up to $18,400 on selected executive-driven models. Visit Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
All right, welcome to Hour 3 of the Big Show, your final hour of the program today. At the top of the hour, we are taking you to Rogers Centre in Toronto, Blue Jays, Rays. Lots to get to this hour before we get there. He's Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now Logan Gordon has the biggest stories of this Tuesday afternoon. It is time for Headlines, Logo.
Well, gentlemen, why don't we start with those Toronto Blue Jays? The miraculous run over the last couple of weeks just continued yesterday with an 8-1 throttling against their AL East division rivals, the Tampa Bay Rays. They'll go for another win tonight and secure a series victory when they send Jose Barrios to the mound. He's got an 11-7 record on the year, a 3.52 ERA. The Rays counter with Drew Rasmussen, just 2-1 on the season, with a 3.25 ERA. It's been a remarkable run for the Jays. They've won 15 of their last 17. They're a game up on the Yankees for the first wild card spot in the American League. Dan Schulman, the voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, that you hear him all the time on the TV side of things, joined our sister station, Sportsnet 590. It's a bit of a longer clip, but he just kind of goes over what the last couple of weeks have been like, how this all came together for the Blue Jays, and how even the most optimistic of Blue Jays fans couldn't have seen this run coming.
I mean, in 2015, I think they went 43-18 that last 61 games, at, you know, kind of around the trade deadline through the end of the season. This is obviously a shorter stretch from when it started to the end of the season. But 15-2 is nuts. Like, absolutely, you know, yeah. Even the most optimistic fans might have said, okay, 2 out of 3 from Oakland and maybe 3 out of 4 against the Yankees. And, you know, you could have conjured up a 12-5 stretch, maybe. Yeah. But 15-2 is just unbelievable. And it's funny, it goes back to the moment, I'm sure both of you guys remember it, the Friday night game against Oakland. Mm-hmm. They're down 8-2 in the eighth inning. And I didn't say this on the air, but I said it in my head. If they lose this game, I think it's over. It just felt like that. And then Gurriel hits the grand slam. Then they fall behind by 2 in the top of the ninth, and then Simeon walks it off. They sweep the series, and they go on this unbelievable run. You know, we put up 2 sets of standings last night, August 27th and yesterday. The Blue Jays went from 9.5 back of the Yankees to a game up on the Yankees in 17 days. They gained 10.5 games on arrival in 17 days. And again, there's just, I don't care, the most optimistic Blue Jay fan in the world could not have seen that coming.
It's kind of true, Pat. And I know it's funny because, Will, we've talked about this. You and me and Derek were doing the air while Pat was away. And Pat, you really missed out on some of the low levels of this Jays team a couple of weeks ago when nobody was talking about this Jays team doing anything. You were looking forward to the offseason and the futures of Robbie Ray and Marcus Simeon, and it's just been an absolutely wild tear over the last 2 weeks, and I think Schulman's 100% correct. And, Will, you've seen it on the text. Oh, you guys said they were dead. Everybody said they were dead in the water. Nobody saw 15-2 coming.
Well, he just talked about in that clip. 10.5 games in 17 days. Just doesn't happen. Plain and simple, it doesn't happen. And the two teams, since the Yankees went on that 13-game win streak, they've gone in opposite directions.
Not only have the Jays been red hot, but the Yankees
have been ice cold.
Yep. Everybody around them has been average or worse.
Exactly. They've won,
I said it yesterday.
You know, Yankees have won, I believe, 2 of 19, and the Jays have won 17 of 19. So it's been complete opposites, and that's why the swing that Schulman just talked about happened. It was very unlikely. But credit to the Jays, who got red hot, and it also helps when you win, you know, 3 games head-to-head with the said Yankees. It's been a remarkable run, and nobody saw it coming. George Springer comes back, then gets injured, misses a few days. Now he's back again, and as I said earlier in the program, Charlie Montoyo looks at it and says, well, I'm not going to change my lineup. This is the group we're going with, and the pitching staff has figured it out. Jose Barrios went through that real cold stretch. Now he seems to be getting it back. I believe he's looking for his fourth consecutive win in four straight starts. So it's all kind of turned for this team. And the one thing we didn't talk about earlier, Pat, he's four RBIs off the lead. All of a sudden, the Triple Crown for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Yep. seems very much in reach. And he passed Shohei Ohtani for the number one spot with home runs last night, hitting his 45th. Average at 318, which is tops in the big leagues. He's got 103 RBIs. He's tied for third with Devers in Boston and Sal Perez and Jose Abreu above him. Perez has got 105 and Abreu's got 107. So the way the Jays are scoring, to see him outpace those guys by four RBIs probably isn't all that unlikely. And boy, what a story that would be if he somehow ends up as the Triple Crown winner in the American League and in baseball.
There's a lot that's going on right now that you just really like to see with this Blue Jays team. I mean, right now, not only are they destroying teams at the plate, not only are they slamming baseball, like they are murdering baseballs right now. But what I think is, like, the way that they are grinding opposing pitching staffs has been really good to see. Like, this team, for instance, they broke that game wide open in the fourth inning last night. But a big part of them breaking that game open was what they did in the third inning, where they left three runners on base. They stranded three runners with the bases loaded and one out. But they still made it so that they're grinding through at-bats, 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 and that has an impact as you go through a game. And you can't tell me that them busting open that game in the fourth inning, the third inning didn't have... And we've seen that time and time and time again over the last month, is that they are, even when they are not getting on base, even when they are not driving in runs, they are still making pitchers work and still grinding out their ABs. And the point that you made right there, Will, and earlier in the show, is right now they're not just getting it done at the plate. Alek Manoah is coming off a 8-inning game where he struck out 10 and gave up one hit, and Robbie Ray has been consistently ace quality, like, and having Ryu as like the third or fourth best option on your pitching staff is a luxury that you want to have. This team is good. This team is hard to get out. This team is hard to get on base against. And they're doing it against good teams. They're doing it against bad teams. Yeah, they put up 750 runs on the Orioles, but they also beat the Yankees four straight. And here they are coming off a win against Tampa. Now, good, one win against Tampa, but you've got to continually win series. As much as they're in the driver's seat logo, they have sole possession of the number one wild card spot in the AL. They still need to be winning more than they lose down the stretch. And so taking 2 of 3 against the Rays is exactly what we're talking about in that regard. We'll see if they can get a step closer to doing that or do that tonight in game 2.
All the action in less than an hour away, 5:07 first pitch, all of it right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You can also watch this one on Sportsnet West tonight. Perhaps one of the most controversial players in baseball history over the last decade or so announced that he is retiring today, gentlemen. Ryan Braun, the 2011 NL MVP and a 14-year pro with the Milwaukee Brewers, announced his retirement. He didn't play this year after the Brewers bought out the option on his $105 million year, $105 million contract, excuse me. Earlier in the year, he said that he would contemplate coming back, but only if Milwaukee was interested. They weren't, so he's done. Braun was the fifth overall selection out of Miami in 2015, made it, or in 2005, not in 2015, out of Miami in 2005. Big league debut 2 years later. Won the MVP award in 2011, 2007 NL Rookie of the Year, 5 Silver Sluggers, 6 All-Star selections, helped the Brewers to 5 playoff berths, including the NLCS appearances in 2011 and 2018. However, Braun was linked to performance-enhancing drugs during his career. After he won the MVP in 2011, he tested positive for PEDs, but successfully appealed his 50-game suspension. 2 years later, he comes out and admitted, yeah, he did use the drugs. He apologized. In 2013, he served a 65-game suspension for his involvement in baseball's Biogenesis drug scandal. Pat, how do we look back at the career of Ryan Braun, an MVP, but probably comes with its fair share of asterisks?
Well, here's Braun giving some thanks today when he announced his retirement.
While it's impossible to summarize my emotions right now, what I feel most is one simple thing, gratitude. And I just wanted to take the time to say thank you. I've been incredibly fortunate to be joined by countless amazing teammates, coaches, support staff, friends and family for this incredible ride.
He did not thank the lab tech that he went about ruining his life to prove his false innocence. So that was, and I say that tongue in cheek.
Do you, though? It's not really all that tongue in cheek. It's pretty accurate.
It's the first thing you bring up every time you talk about him. So I don't think you really are that.
It's now a running joke for me, but it still bothers me that Braun is so celebrated in Milwaukee, but it's never really been addressed, the damage that he did. And I'm not even saying the gentleman was without fault, because there's plenty written about how maybe there were some mistakes. Doesn't change the fact that he was a liar, and to prove his false innocence, he went about ruining a guy's life. And that still sticks with me, you know, 10 years later or whatever, however long it was, however long it's been since that time. It does. It still sticks with me. And guys, it's for me, when Logo, you ask about how do we look back on Ryan Braun's career, it's very difficult and for me, impossible to separate the two, because that still rubs me such the wrong way. Even without the PEDs, though, Will, from a strict baseball standpoint, guy, one of the best pure hitters of his era. The guy could mash. He's a hell of a player. He didn't need the PEDs, but everybody at the time was taking him. From a strict baseball perspective, Ryan Braun had a hell of a career, and I'll tip my hat to him in that respect.
One of the best hitters in baseball from 07 to 2012, and then, as Logan mentioned, was never really the same after he was suspended midway through the 2013 season. Didn't play more than 144 games in a year from 2014 on. So, you know, this is a guy who, again, at the time was one of the best hitters in baseball, is a legend in Milwaukee for those reasons. When you're top three in franchise history in literally every offensive category, you're going to be looked at like a god, whether there is history or not. And, you know, this is a guy that, you know, will always be beloved in Milwaukee. Probably won't have the same sentiment. Not going to go to Cooperstown as a result. But, yeah, you know, in that time, one of the best hitters in baseball, and a great text that came in from Lee out of Abbotsford, because it was quite a fall from grace for Ryan Braun. And you know, at the time, at his peak, was an absolute superstar in Major League Baseball.
Next text is so good.
A couple of texts comes in. One says, come look at my body. And then somebody else says, maybe now Chris Colabello can come out and retire. It's a good point.
Come look at my body.
I don't know. Will, you say it every time. And I think it's a fair question every time. Until we get an update on whether or not Chris Colabello has gotten a minute of sleep.
That's why you haven't heard from him, because he's
so sleep deprived.
So tired.
Come look at my body.
The best part was about that text you read, Pat, was how they first sent it in. And it said, maybe Chris Catalanato will retire tomorrow. And then they quickly referred it to
poor Frank Catalanato.
Come look at my body.
Big Cat Frank. He was one of the good Blue Jays players when they were really bad. Like there are the Vernon Wells era and the Cat. John McDonald and Aaron Hill, like the really bad, so Dustin Brown, the really bad Blue Jays era. Frank Catalano is a decent player for him. But yes, Chris Colabello, still without a wink of sleep since he tested positive
poor
for
guy.
PEDs. Yeah. And Justin Braun retiring from baseball today.
The Colabello one was just like, all of a sudden, he's the best hitter in the world.
Like Brady Anderson. Yeah. All of a sudden, Brady Anderson goes for 48 home runs. Where did that come from? Oh.
Well, steroids. The Braun thing's the same. It's just the exact opposite, like Will mentioned. As soon as he takes that 65-game suspension and stops taking the PEDs, very average baseball player.
Below average.
Yeah. See ya. Move to the NHL on headlines.
See ya!
St. Louis Blues re-signing center Tyler Bozak to a one-year deal worth the league minimum of $750,000. That's a significant pay cut for Bozak, who was making $5 million annually on his last deal. 35-year-old with 5 goals and 12 assists in 31 contests last year. Still averaging just short of 15 minutes per game. Still good in the faceoff circle. 56.8% in his career over 12 seasons. the Regina product, entering his fourth campaign with the Blues after 9 years with the Maple Leafs. Will, kind of a sneaky good signing there for Bozak at league minimum for a guy that put up 17 points last year.
Yeah, not sure how effective he's going to be next season, but for a guy who likely will come in, pad and play fourth line center minutes, probably rotates as maybe the 13th forward. Pretty good signing for St. Louis. A guy that, you know, obviously knows that market, being there since 2018. First season there, wins the Stanley Cup. Do I expect Tyler Bozak to play at a 40-point pace this year? No, I do not. But, again, for a team that, you know, is looking for some depth in the bottom six, you could do worse than Tyler Bozak.
I think it's a pretty good, solid bargain signing. For NHL minimum, a guy who was on pace for 45 last year, he's probably going to be in a fourth line, third line at best role this year. But if you can get 25, 30 points from Bozak, which I think is beyond realistic, at $750,000.
I don't think he reaches that.
But so last year, he was like, he's going to drop. He's dropping off that far from 1 year to the next. And I'm not even saying Bozak's a great player, but he 17 points in 31 games. He's been a pretty perennial 30 to 40 point guy over the last few years. Even
I just think, unless you're an absolute superstar at 35, it's hard to continue to put up numbers.
It is.
He played last season in a shortened year inside a division. I'm not sitting here expecting Tyler Bozak to have 30 points next year. No, I'm not.
I just think he's still an NHL.
But I'm not saying it's a bad signing. I think it's a great signing, right, and a good depth piece in the bottom six for
that team. When he's point per game, I'm rolling back this tape when he has 82 at the end of the year.
Yeah, he and Marjankowski.
I just think it's a really low risk. Potentially,
there's zero risk. And as I said to you off the air, for a guy who's got $40 million in career earnings, just signed up to play another year with the best job in the world.
Yeah,
I mean, can't go wrong, and he's got chances, and maybe he does put up numbers because he's got a ton of playing bonuses in there.
Yep.
So if you've got that carrot in front of those players at 35, yeah, might get a chance to get some more out of them.
All right, so that's the NHL story today. Bozak back with the Blues on a one-year deal. We'll move to the NFL for a story.
Just quickly, I just wanted to clarify what Will was talking about. Mark Jankowski, along with other former Flames draft pick Tyler Weatherspoon and Jimmy Vesey, all signed PTOs in New Jersey. That's why the Mark Jankowski drop from Will. Just wanted to get that in there to clarify. Sorry, Logan.
Some big-name signings in New Jersey going to camp. Best player in the league, Mark Jankowski. NFL news that we've probably heard a few times before. The NFLPA has determined that Josh Gordon has successfully completed his NFL monitor treatment program and is recommending that he be reinstated to the league. He's applied for it back in July. He's 30 years old. He'll need final approval from NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, but is ready to play and fully vaccinated, according to Adam Schefter of ESPN. He hasn't taken an NFL snap since 2019 when he was a member of the Seahawks. He's a former All-Pro going back to his time with Cleveland, Pat, where he led the league in receiving with 1,646 yards in 2013. That seems like a very long time ago.
It's because it was.
The best part about this whole story, though, is in the meantime, Gordon made an appearance this past offseason with the Zappers of the Fan-Controlled Football League, as he seeks reinstatement in the NFL. I don't know how many times we can go through this story, Will. Like, I mean, he's still, I guess he's just 30 years old, and that's not out of the question to be an NFL receiver. But 2013, the last time he was really relevant, it seems to be a story every offseason. Josh Gordon comes back, he gets reinstated, does something questionable, and then goes back and has to go through this all again. I'm not saying that I don't wish good things on the guy. Just seems like we've done this before.
I got to walk a careful line here because he does have some skeletons and some demons, and I totally understand that. And whatever he's battling, I hope he is in a better spot. But I'm sick and tired of the Josh Gordon story. I don't care. He's not relevant. He has not been relevant for a long, long time. And quite frankly, yeah, NFL should give him reinstatement, I should say. I don't think a team should sign him. There's just, for me, nothing left in the tank. He can't stay on the field. He can't stay on a team because there's just too much else going on. And I think for Josh Gordon, it's probably best just to move on from football and figure out other things in your life that you clearly are battling. And I respect that. I understand that mental health is an unbelievable battle that nobody knows what the individual person is going through on a day-to-day basis. And I have tremendous respect for that. And I think Josh Gordon is doing his best to battle through that. But as for the football thing, enough. For me, this guy needs to get away from football and figure out his life, not try to get back into football and you know, find a way to get kicked out or booted from the league the next 2 months. I'm tired of seeing the story. I really am.
Yeah, and I mean, if it works out, it'll be a good story. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm super confident that it's going to work out because of how it's gone the last few times that Josh has tried, but I hope it does. I hope it does because it'd be nice to see him finally overcome those demons. Like, it would be I think it would be a nice story. That being said, I mean, he's tried before and it hasn't worked. Do I think he deserves another shot? Sure, because
how many lives has he got? More than Cat?
I don't know. This is probably the last shot, and I think that it's probably at the age of 30 his last shot even to get some interest from NFL teams, if he even gets any. I'm curious to see how it works out. I can't sit here and tell you that I'm super optimistic it's going to, but if it does, it'll be a nice story. I will say that.
Quickly, in the NFL...
Your boy Tim Brady will give him a shot.
Timmy B?
Yeah. Josh Gordon signs with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Josh Gordon has been suspended from the NFL.
Won't be 8 weeks for Raheem Mostert, as initially expected yesterday. It will be the entire season. Torn knee cartilage after leaving the season opener against the Detroit Lions. Just 2 carries for 20 yards. So his season officially done. And if you ever wonder about how guys get paid in the NBA, another one for you. Aaron Gordon, who averaged 10 points and 4 rebounds last year.
Boy, was he good in the slam dunk contest.
25 regular season games for the Nuggets, gets a 4-year, $92 million deal.
Yep.
He was really good in that slam dunk contest.
Pat, what's the AAV on 4 years and $92
million? It'd be like a 23 or something
22.
Like that.
22.
22 and a half?
23.
20, did I get it right the first time?
You did.
Woo!
So, what? You know, just like double what Connor makes on a...
Dumb squirrel finds a nut every once in a while. Hey!
Yeah.
Hey, math on the air?
Yeah, good job.
1 out of 12? Not bad.
Big Show headlines brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. With leaser finance rates as low as 0% on 2021 Q50s. From Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
We talked a lot about bounce back seasons last week for the Flames. We talked about Matthew Tkachuk. We talked about Rasmus Anderson. Well, one Flames player enters this season with a big time chip on his shoulder looking to bounce back as well. We'll tell you who that is next on the Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
2-1 on the season with a 3.25 ERA. A 5.07 first pitch tonight. We'll have all the action for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You can also watch the game on Sportsnet West. Former NL MVP Ryan Braun announced his retirement today after 14 Major League seasons. The former 5th overall pick is the Brewers' all-time leader in home runs with 352. He helped lead the Brewers to 2 NLCS appearances in 2011 and 2018. And Tyler Bozak is returning to the St. Louis Blues. The 35-year-old signed a 1-year deal worth $750,000. Bozak registered 5 goals and 17 points in 31 games last season. This season will be Bozak's 13th in the NHL and 4th with St. Louis. You're listening to The Big Show here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour 3 of The Big Show rolls on as we move towards the Jays and Rays in its entirety. 5:07 first pitch right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Well, there's one player who is as motivated as ever entering training camp, this season for the Calgary Flames, and that is Jacob Markstrom.
I had a drum roll, but Logan turned off my burly like a jerk. Oh. So. Just kidding, Logs.
Let's try it again. And that player is...
There it is.
Jacob Markstrom between the pipes. Logo
was right. Turn off my burly, just knowing.
Well, you were watching a fight in the break.
That's true. I was watching Pat Steinberg fight Logan Gordon. It was very...
It was...
One-sided.
Very one-sided. I turtled immediately, and Logan did not let up, and nor should he have.
Logan, you're still undefeated as a fighter, my man.
Good on you. Tough first year for Markstrom. A great start. Remember the first month of the season, we were talking about how Jacob Markstrom looks very much like the $6 million goaltender the Flames made him. But it kind of fell off the rails from there, specifically after that injury. When it was all said and done, Markstrom 22-19-2, 904 save percentage, and not the year that he was looking for. He joined Brendan Parker, Ryan Dietrich on the Firestarter podcast that the Calgary Flames put out on a weekly basis. And you can tell Jacob Markstrom looking for a bounce back year this year.
To this day, until the puck starts for the new season, when you can do some significant change and when you can be out there and start winning games. I think it's going to be till you turn it around. It's going to be there. So, yeah, I wasn't happy and I wasn't good enough. And you know, that's on me. So that's the pressure, you know, I put on myself. And I feel like I had a great summer, and I feel like I'm ready to kick this season starting again.
So that's Jacob Markstrom. Firestarter podcast, bracket buster. Firestarter podcast with Ryan Dietrich and Brendan Parker, and a really good conversation with Markstrom all around about his summer. But, you know, that clip stood out to me. He was not happy during the season. He was not happy on locker cleanout day and put a lot on his shoulders. And I'm glad to hear those comments. It doesn't surprise me. We know how competitive he is, Will. We know how motivated this guy is. And let's be honest. We talked about Tkachuk. We talked about Anderson. You can talk about Monahan or Gaudreau or whoever you want to point to. But if they don't get pretty high-end goaltending from Jacob Markstrom, if he's a 904 goaltender again this year, they'll probably be in trouble when it comes to wanting to get back to the postseason. And if Markstrom resembles the guy that he was in Vancouver for the 2 or 3 years prior to signing here, then the Flames have a much better and a pretty decent chance of being a playoff team when it's all said and done. Like, this is a pretty important linchpin of the season. It's like, yeah, thanks, Steinberg. We know that goaltending's important, but that was not the first year that Jacob Markstrom would have wanted on a new team.
I believe my co-host called the signing a home run swing, a home run signing. And last year was not a home run year for Jacob Markstrom.
Definitely not.
So if the signing's going to end up being the home run that you so eloquently predicted for this team, it's going to have to be way better in year two. And I don't think it's a secret. I've said this for really the entire summer. I don't know if you stand on the same kind of level as I do, but you look at this team's roster, you look at the team's head coach, you look at the way they finished the year last year. I don't think it's a secret that the Calgary Flames are not going to score a lot of goals in the 2021-22 season. So if that is going to be the case, that puts even more importance on team defense and goaltending. It's not all on Jacob Markstrom. And I think as we saw in the second half of the year, Pat, where, you know, really I look at Markstrom's year and you can kind of cut it into three parts. The first part of the season, he played really well, was the team's MVP. Then it was a bit of a downhill. Then he gets injured. When he comes back from the injury, he's nowhere near as good as he has to be. And he finished off the year pretty well.
Yep.
And part of the reason why he finished off the year so well was that the team was playing the Sutter system to a T. They had finally understood the way he wanted them to play. And, you know, they weren't giving up a ton of chances. They weren't creating a ton of chances either. And I think if we're being honest with ourselves and looking at it objectively, that's a lot of what next season is going to be. What you saw in the final 12 to 14 games of this past year. There's not going to be a lot of highlight reel end-to-end rushes on either side. The Flames are going to lock it down defensively and going to try and win a lot of games 3-2 and 2-1. That's just the matter of the fact for me. That's how I read it. And so that's why part of it is I'm pretty confident Jacob Markstrom can bounce back, because if they play that team defense in front of him, it makes the goalie's job a lot easier. He's still got to make the big saves, obviously, but you're not having, you know, high teens in terms of high danger chances mm-hmm. against you. And I think that will be a huge help and assistance for whoever is in goal for this team.
Yeah, and you know, I would have been a little bit more worried about that because Markstrom's best times, Markstrom's best performances have been on teams that give up a lot of shots. And so you wonder, okay, well, what's on a low shot volume against team like the Flames are striving to be? What Daryl Sutter wants them to be is a team that spends a ton of time on the attack, spends a ton of time cycling, putting a lot of pucks towards the net, whether they're high percentage or low percentage looks. He wants pucks funneled towards the net and for that to create some chaos in tough areas. And that also means they don't spend a lot of time on their back foot and in their own zone. That's one of the hallmarks of what Daryl Sutter preaches as a head coach. So in saying that, I was a little worried up until the last 10 games or so that we saw from Markstrom that maybe not seeing a lot of shots would hurt him. But he actually, to your point, played really well down the stretch when he wasn't seeing a lot of shots. And I think that was encouraging, and I think that is something that I'm on board with that, you know, could be a very big positive for him this year. I'm a big believer in the goaltender. As I said, when they made the signing, I called it a home run. I still believe it's a home run, even though year one of six was not the type of year that he wanted. I still believe we're talking about a high-end, bona fide NHL number one goaltender, and I think that he is in line for a significant bounce back. After three really good seasons in Vancouver, he had a dip year. Most of the time when you have that dip year, you bounce back. And that's what the Flames are hoping for. That's what I'm anticipating. Here's Labarde as Lubo joined us on Hockey Central earlier today. Gave his thoughts on the season ahead for Jacob Markstrom.
I'm such a big fan of this player because I just think he gives you so much. And more than just saves. Like, way more. I think he's a culture piece. Mm-hmm. I think he hates losing. I think he's one of those guys that he's constantly challenging himself every day to be better. I love this guy. And so are my expectations high for him? Absolutely. But as you heard on that podcast, could you have higher expectations for himself than he does? Not a chance.
Nope, no chance.
That's him. He owns it. He tells the truth. He wants to be the best. He works as hard as anybody on the team at his craft. You can't give me enough guys like him. You just can't.
He is a motivated player coming into the year. And if you're starting him 60 times this year, Will, which if he's healthy is probably the ballpark that we're talking about for Jacob Markstrom starts. If he gives them 915 goaltending over 60 starts this year, pretty decent chance they're fighting for a playoff spot or in a playoff spot. That's what this guy can do. And I just don't think it's completely out of the question that, in fact, I mean, there's a decent chance that he can be that 915, 920 goaltender. He's been that before over 55, 60 starts. What's to say he can't do that again? And I think your point about him playing over 82 games with this team playing the way Daryl Sutter wants him to play, I think that can play into him having a really nice season in that body of work.
Well, on a 60-game workload in a Daryl Sutter system might not be as intense as other times that a goalie plays 60 games. And I think that's also very important. And the biggest, I think, two X factors for me when you're talking about Markstrom's workload is A, Daryl Sutter loves to play his number one goaltender. We saw that last year down the stretch mm-hmm. when he continued to go to Markstrom despite, by all accounts, being on the outside looking in the playoff picture. And the other thing for me, Pat, and what might be the most curious part of the season for the Flames, and it's not just the Flames. I mean, it's league-wide. But I don't think many teams will be looking at their goalie situation like Calgary where you've got a clear number one and a guy that you maybe don't trust as much. I think there's a lot of people that are excited for what Dan Vladar can do for this team in the backup role. And there's certainly some optimism or bullish feelings on his future. But going into next season with 14 back-to-backs, is it just 14 starts for Vladar and that's it? Do you play Markstrom on back-to-back nights? That's going to be something I'm watching because on the nights where the travel's maybe a little bit shorter, you might lean towards going to Markstrom again. And a lot of these back-to-back nights, mm-hmm. there's you know, with Seattle coming in the league, there's some pretty good travel opportunities. And obviously the trips out east where you're playing the Rangers and the Devils, you're probably staying in the same hotel in one night there. So that's what I'm watching. And if history tells me anything, I think it'd be foolish to believe that Markstrom is playing less than at least 60 games this season. All that being said, that's a very important position and a very important year for Jacob Markstrom.
LA Kings started, like Jonathan Quick started in back-to-back years, 14, 15, 15, 16, when Daryl was the head coach in LA, 71 and 68 games back-to-back. And you know, at the time, they had decent work as backups as well, but Daryl's, look at Mika Kiprusoff starts with. And I know that Daryl was only the team's head coach for, you know, two full seasons.
Don't think he wasn't influencing who to start.
Exactly. And you know, Kiprusoff's years where he was starting 68 and 73 and those types of games. I mean, you don't see that very often, and I don't know whether or not we'll see Markstrom 71 times, but 60 or just over 60 wouldn't surprise me. And you brought up Dan Vladar, and I don't know. I don't know what I really have no idea what to expect from Calgary's backup situation this year. You know, they brought in a couple of other or they have a couple of other potential options this year, but Vladar is the guy, and Brad Treliving told us on free agency day when he joined us that they're looking at Vladar as the guy who is going to be the full-time backup. And that doesn't mean that if things change, they can't go in a different direction or Adam Werner can't get an opportunity or something like that. But I mean, you are at least right now going into a season with a very unproven backup. Guy with a lot of potential. And I've read lots about how good he was in his very limited time in Boston and how much potential this guy has got. But no, you're right. There are significant questions about, and if Vladar is not, if he's what Eddie Lack was, remember Eddie Lack in the year that he backed up Mike Smith for a couple of months before he got sent down. If that's what we're talking about, well, then you're a little bit more concerned, and maybe we are talking a little bit more like 70 starts for Jacob Markstrom. But if Vladar's good, and if he can be what Riddick was behind Mike Smith, or what Riddick has been at different, if he can be that, then maybe we are talking about more of a manageable workload. But that's one of the biggest question marks we have for this season. That's right near the top of the list in terms of what we don't know about this Flames team.
And again, the Olympic year and the Olympic break throws a whole different wrench into it, right?
That's right, because you've got a nice break in the middle, but then when you're playing, it's pretty jammed up and a lot of back-to-backs.
And I think Vladar is going to have to factor in at some point.
You would think so.
Markstrom would play for Sweden, too.
That's what I mean.
Yep.
Which only adds to the workload. So 60 games in the NHL, 6 more in the Olympics. That's 66 right there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's asking a guy who, even in the American League, has got limited workload in Vladar. You know, can you trust him for 22 nights a year? Mm-hmm. Is Daryl Sutter going to put him in 22 games? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know the answer. It's one of the biggest. Why it's one of the, if you were to put like questions going into training camp, that would be right near, if not at the top of the list. Markstrom's workload, what you're getting from the backup situation, and how that all plays off and into one another.
And I don't know if the text line's joking. I did not stutter, and I'm not speaking incorrectly. 14 back-to-backs for the Flames this year.
Which is higher than normal.
Yeah, and because of the Olympic break. Yeah. I mean, you look at March, it's ridiculous. Like, absolutely ridiculous for that team.
They got a lot of home games in March, which is the only thing that saves them.
They haven't, from January to February, they barely play at home.
They go, I think, legitimately a month between home games when you factor in the Olympic break, but they play late in January.
January
and late
29th
in
and February 26th.
Like almost a full month between watching the Flames.
Get ready for a lot of roughneck games in February. By the way, in case you're wondering, in March, they play 11 home games and 15 games in 31 days.
March I don't know why it always goes like this, but March, and I know there's 31 days in March, I get that, but like there is every year you go into the season, you're like, holy, like this is the busiest March I can ever remember. And there we are again, 15 games in 31 days. Even in non-Olympic years, you're like, holy, March is insane. They play 17 games in 31 days. And there they are again, 15 and 31.
There's 5 2-day breaks, 2 back-to-backs, 3 back-to-backs, and a bunch of 1-day breaks.
Yeah. Well, at least
you're sleeping bag ready for the dome, Pat.
At least you get into a rhythm. Still crossing.
Might
fingers.
Be a first, actually, in Flames history. Pat, you might be able to again probably confirm this as a reach, but back-to-back home games.
I only can remember once back-to-back home games. It was to start the lockout shortened season in 12-13. They played back-to-back against San Jose and Anaheim on a Saturday-Sunday, I think it was, to open the season.
Yeah,
that's the only time I can remember.
March 25, March 26, Friday-Saturday, home to Arizona on the Friday, home to Edmonton Saturday night.
I've done plenty of, like, home game, road game back-to-back, or even road game, home game.
The previous 2 weekends, that's what they do. Saturday at home to Detroit, Sunday in Colorado on the 12th and 13th, 18th a Friday night at home to Buffalo, 19th on the road in Vancouver, and then the next weekend it's back-to-back home games.
Interesting.
Where Pat will in fact be sleeping in the press box.
Or in the hot stove lounge. Fingers crossed.
There's no couch in there anymore.
No, it'd have to be on the floor or on the desk.
Oof.
Ooh, I almost said something I didn't say, so I shouldn't
say. I think
you
and I were thinking the same thing, and it's glad that nobody said it.
Only other person who might be on the same wavelength as us is Ryan Leslie. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break.
Great security guard.
Great, one of the best. We are going to take a break, and we're going to tell you that Sportsnet 96 of the Fan is thrilled to support the grand opening of Can Golf in Canmore. And we've got a really cool prize that you can enter online to win at sportsnet.ca/960. We are giving one lucky listener a weekend getaway in Canmore with Pinder and Luke Elvey. You've got a golf experience at food and food at Can Golf. We've got an overnight stay at the Coast Canmore Hotel and Conference Center and a $250 gift certificate at Can Golf. If you want to enter, sportsnet.ca/960. Click on
another
the contest
golf trip for
tab.
Pinder.
He's found himself a pretty good niche.
Where does he keep the pictures of Kirsch? That's what I want to know.
I will tip my hat to that niche that he's carved out for himself. It's all brought to you by CanGolf, the new hotspot in Canmore featuring 5 state-of-the-art simulators, a best-of-the-bow food and drinks menu, plus an event space boasting spectacular mountain views. Stay with us on the big show this afternoon. Blue Jays baseball at the top of the hour. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is the big show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Jays baseball minutes away. We're off to Rogers Center for Toronto and Tampa. Game 2 of this 3-game set. Jays with a big 8-1 win yesterday. They enter today's action in the number 1 wild card spot in the American League. A win will guarantee they stay there. Who knows? Could be a little bit of a better position if they're able to take 2 of 3 from the Rays. The third game of this 3-game set is tomorrow afternoon. We'll also have that game in its entirety here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. 1 o'clock, first pitch tomorrow. So no Hockey Central tomorrow. Big Show will start immediately following Jays baseball, and we'll be going from 4 till 7.
There is Hockey Central tomorrow.
Oh, we're doing Hockey Central at noon tomorrow. Okay.
Yes.
So Hockey Central starts at noon, leading into the Blue Jays. And then, see, this is why we have you, Logan.
That's why Logan gets paid the big bucks.
Any feel on what we see tonight for the
no
Jays?
No chance.
I think you'd have to look at them at home as favorites once again. The way they are performing at the plate, and it feels like Berrios, who's getting the start, has gotten things back on track. So yeah, right now, if you're a Jays fan, you're feeling good going into every game, regardless of the opposition.
Just to be the wet blanket I am, Saturday, the bats got cold. The bats are going to get cold again at some point. If you get no hit by the Rays through 6 innings, Pat, I don't think you can explode for 11 like you did against the Orioles. So I would say that at some point here, it's going to have a bad game or two, but I'm not sure it's ready to be tonight. But again, I just think with how hot things have been, expect at some point to hit a bit of a cold streak. How the Jays handle that cold streak and come out of it is going to be very important. But man, it's been running hot so much and so often lately. It's hard to even fathom that could happen. But it's just, again, can't forget that Saturday of last weekend, they were no hit by the worst team in baseball for six innings and broke through in the seventh inning of a seven-inning game.
Keep grinding out those at-bats if you're the Blue Jays. Rest in peace to Norm MacDonald, by the way. That was a big-time shot in
Talk
the gut
about
today.
Legend.
Absolute legend, and it's a hell of a courageous and very private nine-year fight with cancer that we found out about today. So rest in peace to Norm MacDonald, who passed away, an absolute Canadian legend. And if Ryan Leslie is listening right now, this one is for him. It's an oversized hat. It's funny. For Logan, for Will, I'm Pat. We'll talk to you on a late edition of The Big Show. We'll be on just after 4 o'clock tomorrow following Jays baseball. Enjoy Toronto and the Rays next. Have a great rest of your Tuesday on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.